I appreciate it. No, I know who I am. We're good. Let's discuss, everybody. There are altogether, I believe, 9 different, and really, the truth is, we're going to try to run through a lot of things that really should be, it should be hours of classes to be able to go through, but we're going to really summarize them as much as possible, try to figure out a bunch of things. The first thing we're going to go through is deciding if you are ready to date. Okay, I'm going to have 9 things that you should be asking yourself that you should be going through in order to decide whether you're ready to date. The first one is like this. What's your relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu like? What's your relationship with God like? Are you having a great relationship with God, or is it just not happening for you? Are you the type of person who you're finding it hard to be able to ask questions, to say the right things, to deal with things? That's the first thing you really have to ask yourself. How's your davening altogether? Whenever you get to, whenever you have the time for it, what is it like when it comes to things like this? Do you have conversations with God the way that people should? That's the first thing you have to ask yourself. That is not a full prerequisite to getting married, but it is an important aspect where if you need something, you're going to have to learn how to daven, to really ask, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I need a little bit more help with this. And that's really the first thing that a person should go through. Try to start asking yourself, is it there? And if the answer is, I haven't davened in a couple years, then talk to me afterward. Number 2, do you have time to date? Is there time in your life to be able to date? We're all unbelievably busy. We've got so many things going on with so many things happening. Do you have time to be able to put yourself together and to really get this dating thing down? What's your schedule, learning-wise, work-wise, school-wise? You're juggling all these family things and friends and things that are going on. What is your time period for dating? Do you have time during the day? Because it's one thing to be able to go and try to find this person and that person and try to go to Shadchanim, etc. Are you going to be able to set aside 2 days, 3 days a week where you're going to be able to get yourself ready, put yourself in a date, get yourself in the position to be able to go out again? Is that going to be possible, or is it going to be like, yeah, I can go out once, but then I'll see if I can do it? That also deals with, are you available for traveling? Are you able to travel to another city? Or if you're not able to, then maybe this is not the right time to start dating. Maybe you want to wait until a time comes when you're going to be able to start traveling. If you tell me that you can go one place once, but that's it, I can't go any further than that, well, that's not how dating works. That's not going to happen. You have to make yourself available to be able to get somewhere one time or another to be able to get there. And it deals with a lot of other things. Let's go to number 3. 3 is a plan. What is your basic plan for yourself? Number 1, what do you want to do? What's your plan altogether in life? Do you have a plan, or is it just like, yeah, I'm taking it as it comes? Because as great as that sounds to another guy, and we all love that, a girl is not going to like that so much. They may laugh at it the first time they hear it, when they hear about another girl talking about the guy they went out with, that he never had a plan and had no idea what he wanted to do with his life. But that's not good for the girl who is going out with you at that time. That girl wants something, some idea of what you like, where you want to go. And this is the first, really, altogether, one of those things that you have to ask yourself, what do you want to do? Do you have a job? How long will it be until you can get a job in the field that you're in from where you are right now? What's your basic idea? And it also goes with, is your plan realistic? Is it a realistic plan? It's one thing to be able to say, well, I'm going to be a chief financial officer for a major, major company, a Forbes 500 company, and I'm going to be making a good couple hundred thousand dollars a year. What are you doing to get to that? Do you have any plan of getting a degree to be able to get to that point? I mean, what is it that allows you to think that that's going to be possible for you? Where are you? Where are you holding in that? It has to be somewhat realistic. And then, what's your dream when it comes to this? And then what's the reality? That really is the point behind something like this. There's a dream and there's reality. Realistically, where do you think you're going to go with this within the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? And again, I have no idea what's going to be 10 years from now for me, so I know it's going to be just as difficult for anybody here to be able to answer that question. But a basic plan is extremely important to at least outline, so that when somebody asks you, what do you want to do with your life, you have an idea of what you want to say, of what you, and it won't sound silly. It's going to sound like something professional, where you're going to be able to say it, and you're going to say, this is my plan, this is what I can do to get there, here's how I'm going to get there. That's what you want, a plan. Number 4, emotional stability. Emotionally, how are you by yourself? And I mean this honestly. Do you like yourself? Would you go out with you if you weren't you? I know that's deep. You might have to think about that for a little bit. But if you were a girl, would you go out with this guy? What do you have that other people should like about you? And that's something extremely important, because people will go into this not realizing what their strongest suits are. And they'll exacerbate their weaknesses when really they should be showing their strengths as much as possible. Strengths, by the way, is the longest word in the English language with only 9 letters, with one vowel. Anybody know that? It's good, right? You know what the second longest word with only one vowel is?
Strength.
Strength, very good. You got it. That was a hard one. So that's one of those things where you could see, I'll just tell you, on a date, when you're going on a date with somebody, if you've got nothing else, a good random fact always goes a long way into showing how strange of a person you really are, deep in the inside. It's extremely important in that way. But the emotional stability-wise, what do you have? Why should a girl go out with you? And what are you convincing yourself of that I have something that other guys don't have? What is it about you? And if you don't know yet, that's something you have to figure out. In some way, shape, or form, you got to know why you are good, why you yourself are somebody that's really, really good. How are you with your friends? Do your friends like you? Or do your friends hang out with you because you make them hang out with you? What kind of friends do you have? What are your friends like when you're with them? So you want to figure that out. What kind of a person are you with others? Because that'll help you figure things out as well. How are you with a roommate? The last time you had a roommate, or if you're with a roommate now, did your roommate like you? Why does or doesn't your roommate like you? What happens when you have roommates, when you have people around? Are there things that you have that are quirky? Because that doesn't get better when you get married. That's just going to get worse. So what is it that you have to work on now with the roommate or with somebody else where you can say, here's what I need to work on. Here's something that I need to do. This is all in the emotional parts. Are you clean or are you messy? Are you the type of person where everything has to be in order? Are you expecting somebody who's also going to be in order? Or are you a really messy person? You throw everything on the floor and you hope that everything's going to be taken care of as soon as you get married, that your wife is going to be an unbelievable vacuum cleaner and that everything is going to help out. That, David, was just for you. How does it go? How often, and I mean this honestly, and I know this is a guy's room, and if you walked into this building, you smelled it just like I did. That is old guy sweat all over this place. The Space Mentor says this building has it for 60 years running. It is an unbelievably smelly place. Why? Because guys don't shower enough. Nobody here showers enough. And it's something that we have to do more often, especially when you get into the dating world. How often do you shower? How often do you shave? How often do you get new clothes? How often do you wear these clothes? And then, how often do you clean your clothes? Is it often? Is it not often enough? What do you need in order for that to happen? What do you need to do? If you're not doing laundry once every week, you should be asking yourself why. Is it because you're lazy? You don't have quarters? Or is there something that's behind all this that you want to figure out? And that's where it goes within emotional stability. There is the one thing that you don't want on a date is the girl to come into your car and say, whoa, this is a guy's car. And I've heard that from seven girls, seven, and I'm counting, that the first thing they said when they walked into a car is, this is a guy's car. That is the last thing you want. What does a guy's car smell like? Don't take a shower for a day and a half. Don't take a shower for a day and a half and smell yourself. And if you don't know what that smells like, smell somebody else who hasn't taken a shower for a day and a half. I can point out some people right now that probably haven't showered since Friday. And you can do it yourself. You can figure things out yourself. That is number four. Number five, money. Do you have a steady job? Do you have a way of financial stability behind you? Is there someone that's willing to support you? Is there somebody that has money behind you? What do you have when it comes to this? What is there that you have that you can say, I'll be able to, number one, I'll be able to date. Number two, I'll be able to get engaged. And number three, I'll be able to get married, and those things will not be a hindrance. Now, I'm not saying that you have to have everything set. Obviously, that deals with your own level of bitachon and ishtadlos, of what you trust in God and what you know you have to do in order to get there. That's up to every person individually. But again, plan financially. How are you going to deal with this? How are you going to go into the world and be able to take care of yourself and your wife, your spouse, as well as your kids? And just dating-wise, if you're expecting that other people are going to pay for you, how is that going to happen? How are you going to make sure that that happens? Number six, emotional support. Everyone here needs some type of emotional support, whether that becomes into a rabbi mentor, whether that deals with your parents, whether it deals with older siblings. You need someone to speak to, that you can talk to, that you know these people will be behind you no matter what, and that you can always call them up, maybe not on the first call, but you know you'll be able to get a hold of them and speak to them about anything. It's extremely important to have these people around, and if not one, then the other. Getting into the rabbi mentor slash older guy friends slash parents that are able to help you, each one of them are so very, very important. If you have an older married friend, those are invaluable to anything you'll need because they'll tell you what they've been through and what they've had and what they think are pitfalls, what they've had. They know way more than anybody else that's been out of the dating scene for about 20 years. That's what they have that's big. And then number seven. For you yourself, what kind of a girl are you looking for? What kind of a girl are you specifically asking for? You want to look at the looks and be realistic about these things. What do you think the looks should be? And again, What does the girl see in you? What do you have that you feel you can get? And if you feel you have that, what do you expect out of the girl the same way when it comes to looks? I know that we're growing up in a generation where we see way too many things that we shouldn't see, where people are putting themselves out there that they shouldn't be putting themselves out to. And because of that, our vision, our version of what a beautiful, perfect girl looks like is unfortunately an impossibility for us to find. It's not something that's normal. It's something that we expect to be, it's got to be this or else, or it's just not going to work. Realistically, what is a good girl for you? What is somebody that you can see yourself being like? Number two, and that deals with number two as well, weight. What kind of weight are we talking about? If you're expecting the girl to be under 100 pounds, you're going to be dealing with a sickly girl your entire life, unless she's 3'6", right? And that's its own set of problems when it comes to that. What are you dealing with when it comes to weight? Do you expect a girl to stay the same weight her entire life? Because I don't know if you've heard of this thing called pregnancy, where they get a bowling ball that goes into their stomach, but you're dealing with people that will not stay the same weight their whole lives. There is no way they're going to be that way. Are you going to be okay with somebody not being their wedding weight ever again? Ever again. It will never happen. Are you okay with that? And if you're not, well, that's something you need to work on now. Age-wise, what age are we looking at? Are you okay with a girl before they go to seminary? Are you okay with a girl right after seminary? Are you okay with a girl that's a little bit older than you? What are you okay with and what are you not okay with when it comes to age? Wealth. What kind of money are we talking? Are you willing to go out with a girl who's maybe from a higher or lower financial status than you are? Got to remember, if you're a person who's making $50,000, right? $50,000, and your parents made $60,000, $70,000, and you're going with a girl whose parents are millionaires and she's expecting you to make $500,000, right? That's a real problem. What are you going to do when it comes down to and she buys $50,000 worth of makeup every single month? What are you going to do with stuff like that? Those are expensive things. Personality type. What kind of personality are you looking for? Are you looking for somebody that's more out there or somebody a little more inside? What kind of personality do you like? And this, I think, is probably the most important one. Do you have someone in mind that you really want to go out with, but she's married? I mean that honestly. I don't mean that in a terrible way. But like you say, I'd really like my wife to be like that person. Not that you want to marry that person. I'm not saying in a sick way. But I'm saying like the person that I have in mind is like this. This could be somebody like, and again, not in an Oedipus complex type of way, somebody like my mother. Is it going to be somebody like my sister, my sister-in-law, a friend's wife? Somebody out there, is there a certain person that you have in mind and that person is there? And if that's true, then how did those go through all of these things of looks, weight, age, wealth, personality type, all of these things, how is that going to go with that person that you have inside your head? If you have a certain person inside your head, remember, no other person knows what person you're thinking of. So when you're trying to describe the person that you want, you're going to be missing out on the most important things. You're going to be set up with these girls and you're going to say, well, they're not like that girl. And again, it could be a subconscious thing. But is there somebody that you're thinking of, I'd really like my wife to be like this. And if you're thinking of somebody and nobody else compares to that person, that might not be very fair. I've been told on the other side that a lot of girls have a certain rabbi in mind or a mentor in mind where they think this is what my husband has to be like. And they forget, right? Not everybody could be like me. I'm really sorry. None of you are going to be like me. You might be better than me. You're probably going to be worse than me. But there's no way that everybody is going to have a husband that's as great as Zvi Zimmerman. So if you're expecting your husband to be Zvi Zimmerman at the age of 18, I was Zvi Zimmerman at the age of 18, but nobody else was. So that's a problem. What are those expectations that you have for that girl at the age of 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, etc., going all the way up? What are your expectations of where she is and what she is? And again, if you already have predetermined expectations for that person, that's really, really difficult. It goes through. So altogether, and our last thing that you need to do in order to get ready today, any type of genetic testing / Dor Yesharim. That doesn't mean that you have to do it. That is up to you, your mentors, and try to figure it out on your own. But to decide, are you going to do this or not? Are you going to? If you're going to, you need to do it as soon as possible. Waiting as time goes on can only make a situation worse. That means that it could be that the girl you've been dating for a month, 2 months now, then you decide to get Dor Yesharim, ends up not being the girl for you, which is heartbreak on both sides, and that's something that's terrible, and it could have been prevented. It could have been something that you could have taken care of beforehand. If you're going to do Dor Yesharim, if you do not have your Dor Yesharim number and you are over the age of 18, you've got to get it done right away. You have to do whatever you can in order to get it done. Or the genetic testing they have in hospitals, they're not as good. I can't tell you that they're going to be as perfect as what Dor Yesharim does. I can't even tell you that Dor Yesharim is perfect. But each person has to decide that on their own. So again, you want to go through your relationship with God, your timing, how much time do you have, your plan, what kind of plan do you have, emotional stability, number four, number five, monetarily, financially, where are you heading? Number six, emotionally supportive, what kind of support do you have? Number seven, what kind of girl are you looking for? Number eight, Dor Yesharim genetic testing. If you have those down, if you can answer those questions and you're not stumbling through answers, now you're ready to date. Now you're the person who's now at the point where, okay, I'm ready to date. I think I can do this. Here's where I'm going. So now I lead it up to Rabbi Sheinfeld.
Don't worry, Rabbi Zimmerman, we'll be back up here. You don't have to, it's not time to leave yet. I'd like to thank Rabbi Zimmerman for sharing this event with me, and I'd like to thank David for organizing the event and the Chicago Shidduch Initiative. Wish them much hatzlacha. My name is Rabbi Levi Sheinfeld, and if I wasn't being recorded, maybe I'd share a lot more personal, embarrassing stories, but Rabbi Zimmerman has a ton more rabbinic experience than I do, but I fortunately, unfortunately, have a lot more real life experience being in your shoes, being in your in your place in this time of life. So try and go through the process after you've done all the soul searching that Rabbi Zimmerman recommended, and it can't be understated how important it is, because if you're not stable, so then it's just going to be worse getting married. So Rabbi Zimmerman is very correct. And then afterwards, after you have decided that you are ready, not because your friends are all going out, or not because you've hit some magic number age that it's time to go out, or not because even necessarily your parents are pressuring you to go out. If your mentor is talking to you about it, maybe it's time to reconsider, but you have to be the one that decided that you're going out. And it's very possible, because of the quote-unquote shidduch crisis that's out there, if I'm speaking to guys, that names have been mentioned to you in the past before you were going out, and the response was always, no, I'm not going out, I'm not in the parsha yet. I have to learn some of the lingo. I'm not in the parsha yet. And so therefore, it's time to start changing that and get your name out there. Really, the shidduch system is a massive networking system. For those of you who are maybe a little older and you're starting to get jobs, you got jobs, you're looking to change jobs, there's search engines out there, there's job sites out there. That's what the shidduch system is, self-contained within the Jewish nation. And it goes intercity and interstate and internationally, as well as locally, obviously. And you need to get your name out there into that, you know, massive network. Now, how do you go about doing that? So shadchanim come in all types, and I know on the website, I did look at the website, it had the wrong flyer, I apologize to anyone who saw it, it didn't have my name on there, but it's okay. And it does have a list of local shadchanim. I first want to discuss the cyber world of shidduchim. There's some more well-known sites, less well-known sites. I personally would strongly recommend against using a internet website for shidduchim, at least in the beginning. To stay to local shadchanim where you are, or to stay with real people shadchanim. Not that I understand each different website works differently with just pairing you up with a shadchan or the sort, but to stay with something real and old fashioned in the beginning. You know, if unfortunately the process, you know, extends and goes longer, and maybe you're starting to exhaust the shadchanim, so maybe get your name out there, because again, sof kol sof, using the internet will get your name out there in a much bigger and louder fashion throughout the Jewish world. And the next type could be professional shadchanim, which you've probably, again, if you haven't started going out yet, you've probably seen a lot or heard a lot of stereotypes of how evil those people are. And it's not really so bad, you know. And that's going to have to be something that you're going to have to change your mindset about how you interact with them. And on a almost like a subcategory of professional shadchan would be your abayim, or your mentors. And then the third category would be friends. Married friends, whether friends of the family, or your friends. And everything has its pros and cons. Again, I'm not going to discuss the cyber world right now. I'm not going to discuss that tonight. But the professional shadchanim versus your friends really, you know, have pros and cons. And they don't have to be mutually exclusive. You know, some people may say, I only want to stick with X or I only want to stick with Y. It doesn't have to be. But how to go about doing it really has pros and cons. Shadchanim, obviously, has the pro of a much bigger network. They're meeting as part of their, whether it's their job or they're just a bored housewife. They're meeting with, you know, prospective guys and girls, and therefore by definition they should have more. Plus, many of them work in partnership with other shadchanim, which, you know, increases their pool of clients, of potential matches. Also, if you get more getting more nuanced in the aspect of shidduchim, and this will come up later on when Rabbi Zimran comes out, that yes, there's an emotional component, a very strong, important emotional component to a shidduch working, but there's also intellectual aspects, and there's also, you know, hashkafic aspects. Many of those things, when a guy is going out with a girl, could hit a bumpy road, and something could be stated and misunderstood. So that's where a Rebbe can come in. But even a professional, a good shadchan, is able to turn things around and make it look in a different light. Not, again, not in a conniving way. Some of them could be like that. But in a way that makes you see things in a different light. So they can talk smoother. They can try and make what could have been a major problem into not a problem. And for sure, as the shidduch progresses even further, if there's other clashes, even through expanded families, about how the shidduch, it's really more in a much more yeshivish matzav maybe than most people here, but that when it comes down to it, many times the parents are going to meet before the actual shidduch goes through. A professional shadchan is obviously much more capable, much more adept at handling the going backs and forth of being an arbiter, whereas maybe if you were dealing with a friend, that would be a little bit much more uncomfortable. It's nice to be a shadchan as a friend until, you know, things get a little rough. However, friends probably know you a lot better than any professional shadchan. Although a professional shadchan, through experience, will be better at analyzing and reading things, and maybe even reading between lines. So, they're not going to know you better than a friend knows you. However, the downside is that maybe the friend doesn't know the girl as well. Because as a side point, again, this is my personal opinion. I've made this clear here to guys. And I understand that this could be a little fuzzy depending on what type of society you are in or what you're used to, but that, you know, single guys discussing with other single guys shidduchim and the sort is really a no-no in my book. If a single person either went out with a girl and he feels it's good for a friend of his, he should not be the shadchan. He should be bringing it up with a Rebbe, not necessarily to go through, or even mention it to the shadchan, but to go through a Rebbe should not be the one, because again, a shadchan has to be in the middle between both sides, and if it's a single guy or a single girl, that could get awkward, because there are times you have to bring up to a shadchan that I didn't like this or I did like this, and it's just inappropriate, as well as guys even in a dorm discussing dates that they did or didn't go out with, or girls that they did or didn't go out with. You know, I've witnessed a conversation where a guy was making fun of how ugly the girl he went out with was. And everyone was laughing because it was funny the way he was saying it. But it was she's married. I think he's married also, not to each other. But it was probably very hard for her to get another date with any guy in that yeshiva. Because, any guy is going to be self-conscious, which I'll get to a little bit later, about, well, he was calling her so ugly, everyone was laughing, and I'm going to go out with her? And then what? If I get engaged, everyone's going to make fun of me that I have an ugly wife? It's just a lack of tznius that single guys. Also, maybe it was a hashkafic issue. And one guy's going to be like, well, why should I go out with her? I know he went out with her, and he's just like me, and that there's no point. Whereas, you know, maybe it's not so good. I know a guy, he's been married to his wife for 15 years. And he asked his friend if it was a good match for him. The friend felt absolutely not, but the friend didn't say a word because he was a single guy. He didn't want to talk about a single girl. And so, because it's a good thing he didn't say anything, because he would have listened. He wouldn't have gone out with the girl. And instead, they're married for 15 years with kids and, you know, a nice family. So, it's single guys and single girls also, again, don't have everything figured out. It's just not appropriate that we're speaking about the opposite gender in a dormitory. And it just makes for potential uncomfortable situations in the future. So now that it seems pretty clear that we need to meet a shadchan. So there's steps involved, things that you should be, if you haven't done so yet, or you're going to meet again, maybe you haven't done it the best way possible, or maybe you just want to do it again, meeting a shadchan, what you should be prepared for, and what you should be prepared to do when you do go meet a shadchan. There's, again, like I mentioned, on the website, many different ladies that are listed there. I think their contact information is listed there also. You can click on them and be in touch with them. Be aware, as Rabbi Zimmer spoke about, who you are and what you are. Because different women, you know, have a little bit of a niche more in different hashkafic circles. And therefore, you're not going to be comfortable going to a Hasidic shadchan who's going to set you up in someone's living room for one date and then either decide you're getting engaged or not because your parents already decided anyway. That's obviously not something you want to do. So you have to be aware, at least, of who you're calling. And if you're not sure of who these names are, so you can speak to your rebbe. That you can even speak to your friends maybe already involved in dating, who's a shadchan that maybe you know, would understand them. But there's different shadchanim who know more guys or girls in a specific setting, whether it's modern Orthodox, more yeshivish, more Haredi, whatever it is. Nothing's bad, nothing's good. But you want to make sure that you're talking to someone who will get you and will have a pool of girls that's gonna be shayach for you. You're probably going to want to meet at least two or three shadchanim, professional shadchanim, I'm meaning, because since it's all about networking, you want to get your name out there, right? Maybe we'll mention, you don't want to get your name too out there, but you need to have your name out there, and you need to have more people thinking about you who know more girls. Now, you have to not be careful, quote-unquote, but that some of these shadchanim work, you know, in partnerships with others, so it may be a little bit more redundant to meet someone who's a natural partner with one of these, so maybe you want to ask the shadchan after you meet with them, you know, who else should I meet or who else do you work with maybe, and then you'll know who else you can meet. But it's kedai to have two or three of these meetings with shadchanim just to, again, get who you are out there and get more people thinking about you and more possible, girls that could come across as your matches for you. And then your friends can supplement that, meaning your friends who are married, whose wives or something, and maybe you ate their house for Shabbos or something like that, they will say, oh, you know, I know a girl for you, and that will be something that, you know, will be, you know, almost automatically, you know, will be something that will come up, and you don't have to do too much work. So now that you've decided, you've talked to the shadchan, you've called the shadchan, and you've arranged the time, you know, realizing that, yes, a shadchan is a real person, you know, with a family, maybe kids of her own, maybe grandchildren of her own. The older the shadchan gets, and I'm talking about maybe even in the 50s, 60s, they'll probably be traveling a lot more. So now, in today's day and age, you know, you'll be needing, you know, email access, you know, to the shadchan will be much more than when I was going out. It was more phone calls. But again, they could be even traveling out of the country. And I was actually talking to a shadchan last week, and she's telling me about how she's traveling. And I said, well, you're still going to be in contact. People are going to be able to reach you. Oh yeah, of course, but not as much. Okay, that's something you're going to have to deal with without freaking out. As the time comes, it'll go, you know, more into the actual dating process. But so you arrange a meeting with a shadchan and schedule the time. You should make sure that you're on time. And again, the theme that I'll mention a couple of times, I hope, is that you need to give over a wonderful impression to this shadchan, because you want this shadchan thinking about you. You want this shadchan considering you, and you want this shadchan recalling that yes, you are a mensch, so that she doesn't feel, you know, bad suggesting someone to you, because why would I want to suggest a nice young girl to a jerk? So we have to keep in mind that we are, obviously for our mitos always, we should be wonderful people, but especially at a time like this, that, you know, if she's late or if something's going on in her house, that you just take everything with a smile, but you need to show up there put together. Put together, sort of like what Rabbi Zimmer spoke about before, you don't necessarily have to come dressed for a date, but don't come straight from the gym either, you know? Take a shower to make sure you smell good. You know, don't have the meeting in your car if that's going to be a realistic problem of what the car smells like. But again, you're going to meet in her house. You know, she's going to be nice. Maybe there'll be some food. Make sure make brachos. You don't have to do it loud and clear. Just make sure it's seen that you're, you know, you're acting appropriately for a nice Jewish boy. What are you good? You're going to need to discuss yourself, whether even if you're uncomfortable with it. After Rabbi Zimmerman's list, you shouldn't be uncomfortable talking about yourself anymore, because that's going to happen a lot on dates anyway. So you're going to have to talk about yourself, talk about your own personal history with regards to yeshivas and schools, jobs, and also your family background a little bit. You don't necessarily have to get into, you know, which shtetl your grandparents came from and see if they knew each other. But just, you know, if you've lived around in different cities, you know, the schools that you went to, your siblings went to, maybe even who your siblings are, your parents, a little bit of background. Again, the you're going to, I don't know, I mean, see, I'm looking around the room, most people in the room have glasses. To me, growing up, the most stressful time I ever had was going to the eye doctor. Because you're sitting there in the chair, and the eye doctor puts the glass in front of you and goes, is it better like this or like this? Like this or like this? And I'm trying to think, like, what's the right answer? I don't want him to say, see, you don't even need glasses. I faked you out. Yeah, I'm just so nervous. But the truth is that he's doing it for your benefit. He wants to get the glasses that are best for you. The same thing here, meeting with a shadchan. You don't want to give a false impression of who you are, because you don't want her to be suggesting people that have no shaychas to you. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be completely open and honest, but we'll talk about that in a second, but you need to be honest enough that the right types of shidduchim, and that's what Rabbi Zimmerman had, the whole list of what you are, what you're looking for, so that you're going to get an appropriate match. And that's why, especially, you know, when it comes to the hashkafa, so you need to know, like Rabbi Zimmerman was saying, is genuinely what you're looking for, and what type of hashkafa you're going to say. Again, these are things that you're going to give over to the shadchan, and it's going to sound cliche, and it's going to sound generic, and it's, you know, it's not like a job interview where you need to, you know, do something that just makes you automatically stand out, like, whoa, this guy is unique. It doesn't have to be like that. It has to be honestly you. You're also going to need a resume. And you should bring a hard copy of your resume. Again, even if you're on the younger side over here, there's nothing wrong with starting a resume, especially if it's going to be on a computer. It's easily changeable as things progress. But a resume is not going to be as intense as a job resume. As you'll see, a resume should have your name on it, your age, if not your age, because, you know, maybe it'll be there for a while, but at least your birthday, so that your age is clearly figured out. Probably your height, because that usually makes a difference in at least prospective shidduchim. It doesn't have to be, and where you are located. I personally feel, and again, I haven't been involved enough, for sure not for my kids. My oldest kid is 8. I haven't been involved enough even with guys, at least not yet. I did speak to a couple of shadchanim about this. I feel that your phone and email should not be on the resume. Just like I'm going to say that I don't think a girl's phone number and email should be on the resume. I believe you should handwrite it in, have the shadchan handwrite it in on the hard copy that you're giving them so they can be in contact with you. But I would strongly discourage it. Again, if the shadchan wants it, the shadchan's not going to know how to get in touch with you because it's all on the computer, and so maybe it's not such a good shadchan. But if the shadchan expects it to be proper protocol, so then you'll have to put it in. But you can quote me as saying that I don't feel so appropriate because these resumes are getting sent out. And we don't need a bunch of single guys and single girls having everybody's contact information going forward. Even though we expect everyone to be, you know, 100% on their best behavior, we don't. It's not something that guys need to have on their phone. I'm the type of guy that never deletes a contact from my phone. There's people I go through, I have no clue who these people are anymore. But you know, it doesn't need to be out there. Yes, obviously, you may go out with a girl and you may end up getting her phone number, maybe even before the first date, or maybe later, depending on how the shadchan wants to run things. But it doesn't need to be something that's, you know, in your email and your Google for the rest of your life. Let's turn the page over here. You're also going to need your parents and occupations, and your siblings and their spouses, if there are any, and occupations, or if they're still in high school, whatever, because it gives a greater whole picture of who you are. I was once in a psychology class, and this specific professor, he was very into seeing as much of the whole family as possible, to get the dynamic, to really understand how each person fit into whatever given dynamics there were, to be able to treat with everything. So too with this. a dynamic of whether you're the oldest, you're middle, you're the youngest. You know, are you aunts and uncle? Are you an uncle 14 times over? All those different things make a bigger picture of where you are, of who you are as a whole person. And this afterwards, or maybe it's in the beginning, should be a short description, much like what you discussed with the Shadchan face to face, but just a short description of who you are, where you've been, maybe even where you intend on being, or where you're trying to get at least a field of a type of job that you're going to get into. References are important on the resume. In actuality, they're probably much less important than what's really done. But there should probably be 3 to 4 references with phone numbers, names, and their connection to you. You should have a Rebbe or a Rav. Now that's where we get the 3 or 4, a Rebbe and or a Rav, depending on your role in life and where you are. A family friend and a personal friend. Again, there could be multiples of it. Realizing that some people make a lot more phone calls. Pictures. Pictures are probably a lot less shy for guys. I don't think girls ask for pictures as much. Again, a picture for me, in my opinion, is as much as it's important. And we'll get to that. I strongly disagree with pictures being sent electronically. I see lots of resumes with the girls' pictures on it. I've also mentioned that to Shalchanim. I don't understand why. Ideally, if a picture, yes, a picture should be very important, as we'll get to, but there's got to be a better way than a guy having a girl's picture for the rest of his life in his email. And also be careful in your short description of yourself to be clear, but you don't have to say everything. TMI would be a disaster. If you start writing, everything you get every time you're at Walgreens, it's going to be a problem. They don't need to know that. It's for sure not in a resume. Maybe as this shidduch progresses, maybe that's something that would need to be discussed. But you don't want to scare somebody off before they even get to meet you. So again, meeting the shadchan, it could end up that they'll call you, depending on who you are and where you are. But the odds are you'll have to make a phone call. You'll have to be proactive about that. You'll arrange a meeting. You'll come with dressed appropriately with a copy of your resume containing the description of yourself, your family history, your family description, where you fit in that family, and some references with phone numbers. You probably should make a mention to your references that you're putting them down or asking them to put you down because you want to make sure they're going to say good things about you. And then again, you leave that copy of the resume with the shadchan. Thank the shadchan. Thank her for her time. It could be a he also. Thank her or him for their time. And don't call them the second you walk out the door saying, "Did you think of anybody yet?" Wait. Give it time. This is what I'm talking about. Don't get your name out there too much. Don't give over that impression that you're, crazy, socially awkward, or desperate, even though you may be all of those. But you don't want them thinking that about you. You want to give over a good impression. Let them think. Let them digest who you are. It could be that she's got 7 other things to deal with, and she took out time to meet with you. So you want to give time to, now, after a week, or maybe 10 days, if you haven't heard anything, you may want to call and leave a message. But again, it's not one of those, stalkerish type things. It's just every once in a while. Because we have to remember, Hashem is still in charge. Shadchan is a shliach of Hashem, just like the shadchan is, just like a doctor is a shliach of Hashem, to heal us. Hashem is the one in charge. Hashem is the one making shidduchim. And I'll probably get to a story or two about myself in dealing with the shadchanim. Because on the other side, there's another side of dealing with shadchanim. And that's segueing into the next section of dealing with dealing with a prospective match. How do we deal with that? So, I didn't think I was going out that long ago, but evidently things have changed. It seems like shadchanim are very open to suggesting up to 3 people at a time of maybe X, Y, or Z would be a good match for you. Here are their resumes. Go ahead and look into it. So now, you potentially met 2 or 3 shadchanim, and each one is calling you with up to 3 names, and maybe your friends are calling you with names. Very quickly, again, going back to the shidduch crisis, being a guy, very quickly, you could be up to over 10, 12 girls being thrown at you at one specific time. And that could make you feel like a Balgaiva. It can make you feel like you're in control. And it can also make you feel very overwhelmed. And none of those are good for making a sound intellectual, emotional decision. And therefore, I strongly suggest, and I know it's not shy for everybody because everybody comes from different situations, but that you have some background music and you have a married parent, or I mean a married friend, or a parent, or an older married sibling who can be that buffer for you. That maybe, you know, you give the shadchan your phone number, but you also give them your, whoever your middleman's phone number is, and that middleman can be the one taking down all the information. Again, when I was going out, there was email. It was a little bit less used. I just remember my mother was, mom was writing things over in her notebook of all these different references and names. And it was much more time consuming than it is now to be a middleman. But to have this middleman, because if there's a middleman there, a shadchan, again, we were talking before about all the nice ways a shadchan can help you, but a shadchan can also be very pushy. And knowing that you're confused and knowing that, and maybe try and take advantage of getting you to say yes or pressuring you and calling you multiple times to try and egg you on about a specific shidduch because she is the one. She is the one. You just don't know that yet. But you just have to trust her. She is the one. So having that middle person can be that easy buffer of, okay, I'll have to discuss it with him. And then even that middle person can make some of the initial inquiries for you. Now you have to make sure, this is a very, very common problem, you have to make sure that whoever that middle person is, if they're making requests about you or interviews about you, that they are on the same page as you, at least for what you want. Even if it's something that they strongly disagree with, if they're looking into things for you, they have to be on the same page as you. And stories about a guy wanted to live in Israel, his parents wanted to live in America. Well, that's not going to work if they call up a reference that says, oh yeah, this girl, she wants to live in Israel. Well, the parents are going to say no, even though that would have been great for the guy. Or vice versa, or anything like the sort. She wants a learner, he wants an earner. Whatever it could be. You have to make sure that this middle person is committed to being on the same page as you, or else they can't be doing this job for you. They could be an intake person for you, and especially now when resumes are just emailed, so they don't necessarily have to, you know, stop writing things down. They could just forward the emails to you. But to have somebody who can at least help you, quote-unquote, being almost like a secretary. Being like a secretary, doing you a favor, being like a secretary. Once you've got a resume, so yeah, go ahead, call the Rav, not you. I'm saying again, whoever's doing the research, it could be you. You probably don't want to be that person. Especially, again, if it's calling a personal friend who may be a single girl still, it's probably better that you don't make those phone calls. Although, I could tell you that I impersonate other people calling single girls for myself when I was going out. The use of Jewish geography and Jewish networking will come in very handy. Because so obviously a reference is going to be saying all the milas of the prospective girl. And again, no one... Hilchos Lashon Hara still does apply to a certain extent in Shidduchim. You have to be careful. It's not a hefker belt. But just being told of some things, especially if you're dealing with a girl who's not from your community or not from your city, that you may not know things about, it's very possible that you call a friend who lives in that city and they're able to tell you something that maybe you didn't know about the family. Or maybe you didn't know about something. It's very, very common, very, very shaykh, and using that Jewish geography. But you also have to be careful not to drive people crazy. And again, it's probably not as common in our circles, but really, really intense questioning and the same question eight different ways. And you really have to remember that references are really friends and volunteers who don't necessarily have hours of time to be kept on the phone dealing with silly questions about tablecloth colors and stuff like that. So again, you just have to keep in mind, whoever is doing this asking for you, that they're not giving over a bad name for you, because that will end up coming back to the girl or to the other side, in whichever way it is. My Rebbeim, or most of my Rebbeim, taught me yesterday's parsha. We have that Aaron married Elisheva, the sister of Nachshon, and Chazal or not, it's very important to look into the brothers of a prospective girl before you marry her. My Rebbeim told me that nowadays it doesn't really apply. You don't have to be asking questions about any of the brothers, especially all the brothers, to know, you know, exactly how or whether or not this is a an appropriate shidduch for you. Again, spoke about the use of pictures. Pictures, again, no, everybody values their time. I'm not taking away from that. Everybody values their time. And especially if you're traveling, it's a lot more expensive, that you want to know at least that there's some shaychus for you on an attraction level, whether this girl is even worth your time and money. I get that completely. But you still have to remember the concept of tznias still applies. And again, therefore, it's not something that should be discussed, not something to be shared. And that's why, again, ideally, you should make it over to the shadchan's house to be able to see a picture. Or if your parents are involved, or an older married friend or sibling is involved, that they get the picture and show it to you. That it's not something that you should come into control of. And on the same note, be very careful. And I strongly disagree with researching on social media. First of all, you have to remember that they could do the same thing to you. And are you sure, you're confident about what's on you on social media, whether, you know, content, topics, or the pictures that are about you, you know, if it was just something, you know, that you, whatever, you know, you and your friends may have done stupidly. And from I'm not on Facebook, but I understand that other people can put pictures of you and tag you, and then you're toast. No matter what didn't happen about you, they got to hire one of these commercials that clear the website of the internet of all your bad data content. But again, it's not appropriate to be trying to find every single picture of this girl or every single event. It's just, we have to remember that even though we're moving into a different phase of our lives, tznias still applies in that regard. And then moving into deciding on a yes, hopefully if a prospective match that the shadchan recommends is a yes, as I've been saying, looks are very important, but it can't be the only deciding factor for a yes. It could be, we'll talk about that in a second, it could be a deciding factor for a no, but looks should not be the only deciding factor for a yes, because, as I mentioned before, there has to be an intellectual component and a hashkafic component of the dating process. As anti-romantic and as anti-Hollywood as that sounds, it's very real. And as I was going mentioned, nothing is going to be like Hollywood. So if that's your mindset, whether it's who you're going to go out with, what your dates are going to be like, or even what your married life is going to be like, you're going to be in for a surprise, and it's going to be hard for you to get over that because it will be in the back of your mind, but, you know, that family wasn't like that on whatever show it is. I don't want to date myself, and I was going to say The Cosby Show, and I know Bill Cosby's in trouble, so it's not a good suggestion. But, you know, you don't, it's not going to be like that, and we all know it's not going to be like that because we all have grown up around, and we all know that it's not realistic, and we probably heard in a million shmoozin that it's not realistic, and yet we think, yeah, it's not realistic for everyone else except for me. And I'm sorry, you're not the me, I'm the me. So it's not going to happen. It's not going to work. So yeah, looks plays an important role. I get it. Looks plays an important role. And looks have to be good enough. Your wife has to be the most beautiful woman in the world to you. Your wife will be the most beautiful woman in the world to you. But the girl you're going out with has to look good enough. Now that sounds funny, but if, and as Rabbi Zimmer will discuss more, the shidduch progresses nicely, and as it's supposed to, so that good enough will transform into the most beautiful woman in the world. Again, that's part of the magic of the dating process. I don't want to get too much involved in. But that to say a yes, you need a good enough. Not in a settling way and not in a fine, but that be realistic, like Rebbe Zimmer spoke about. Be realistic who you are, what you give over, and who's going to be attracted to you, and what you're attracted to, etc., etc. And therefore, you get a yes. Both sides get a yes, and you go on a date. After the first date, unless there's something atrociously bad that happened, you should give it a second date. Many girls especially, but it's true with guys, are very shy. You have to remember that depending on what type of settings they grew up in, they've never really had any intergender relationships, and therefore all of a sudden everything's thrown on them, and they're supposed to look beautiful, and they're supposed to act all ladylike, and then they just get quiet. And they don't talk because they're just not sure. Or you're such a good guy, they heard such phenomenal things about you from all your references, that they know they have to make a great impression, and therefore they clam up. It's very, very likely. So unless something mamish jumps out at you as like, you know, she kisses her cross before she makes a bracha on her coke or something like that. You should give it at least a second chance, especially if you're traveling or she's traveling. Now again, it doesn't mean you should be pressurized into taking a second date if she traveled. But keep in mind that you don't want it to be just a, oh man, I shouldn't have even paid the money, and it'll hurt the next time for it to be that much harder for her to make that decision to travel or for you to travel. I've been involved in situations where I forced the guy who was out of town to just go on a second date because he's there anyway. I forced him. I told him, no, you have to go on a second date. And he did. And things worked out swimmingly. And I didn't ask him for shadchanis on that, but I feel that I positively contributed to building a bias in him and be a soul. And that was a good feeling for me. So you have to just give it a chance. And maybe as the date numbers progress and we'll progress through the evening, we'll tell you when things have to change from a vat I know to say no, or maybe nothing's progressing. That's, you know, maybe even a personal issue or even a individualized issue, depending on who the guy is, who the girl is. But you have to remember that it's very, very common for complete strangers to be shy to one another. And yeah, you're going to have your list of things to talk about and this and that, and maybe the girl will give one-word answers, but especially on a first date, to chalk it up to anything but the fact that she doesn't know how to say any words that are more than one syllable. But again, it doesn't mean that you are going to be or should be blackmailed or forced into going on another date if you absolutely don't want to. But, and this is a mile of dealing with the shidduch system, you don't have to break the girl's heart straight to her face, but you need to be honest with the shadchan for you and for the girl, because you want the shadchan to keep you in mind as what's good for you. You don't want the shadchan giving you another suggestion that's completely off base. So if you open the shadchan and say, you know what, listen, we had the meeting and we spoke, and this girl, she twirled her curls, I just didn't enjoy that. So now the shadchan will know, okay, so maybe curly hair is not for you. It's something you didn't even think about beforehand. So it just pays to be as honest, even if it's a little uncomfortable, it pays to be honest with the shadchan. And also, if it's something that the girl did or didn't do, that the shadchan will be able to go back to the girl and give her advice on how to do it. Nobody likes being the shadchan when there's a no involved when the other side said yes. And no one likes being the shadchan when you have to tell somebody something they did wrong on a date. But in the long run, it is beneficial for everyone involved that those things are clarified. And before you say no, you know, we have to remember that, again, Hashem is running the world. We never know where our zivug is. I was once set up with a girl by her grandparents. By her grandparents. You see it at their house. I had no interest in listening to 80-year-old people about who I should go out with. And then my uncle got involved. And my uncle called me. Now, my uncle is not the most yeshivish guy on the planet. And really, I was telling him how to be the shadchan. It was getting awkward, but I finally agreed to go out as a favor. I creeped out as a favor, and I was such a nice guy that I, as Rabbi Zimmerman said, you have to clean your clothes. So I scheduled mentally that I was going to do laundry, you know, at 10:30 that night, because the date's going to go 2 hours on the button, respectable, act like a mensch, drop her off, and go back and do my laundry, and, you know, be able to get to sleep at a normal time. And in the end, I married that girl. You never know. My first marriage. You never know. You never know where your zivug is going to come from. I never in a million years imagined that these 80-year-old people who are now my grandparents-in-law would be my shadchan. Now, the truth was that I wasn't, after the first date went very well, so we were into it after the first date. But even just the process of getting there was min hashamayim. So, another personal story I would say is about treating the shadchan properly, especially when you're being pressured. Whether you do have a middle man or you don't have a middle man, it can get overwhelming. You have to try and get back to that shadchan, you know, in some type of timely fashion. Whether it's yes, whether it's a no. And again, shadchanim can be irksome sometimes. I wouldn't recommend this. I'm going to say a story about what not to do. But I once had a shadchan call me and suggest a girl. This was before I met my wife. Suggest a girl. And being a guy, I had other girls that I could possibly go out with. I wasn't sure I wanted to, did or didn't want to go out with this one. And I clearly remember my words to the shadchan were, I'll get back to you if it's shy. Now the shadchan interpreted that to mean, I'll get back to you within 24 hours. And when I didn't, she called my mashgiach and said, you know, Sheinfeld's not getting back to me. So my Ashkiach called me into my office and said, you know, what's going on, Shadchan? So I told the Mashkiach my side of the story. He says, okay, but it's Kedai, you should get back to her so she keeps you in mind. So I called her back. 10 minutes after candlelighting, I called her back Shabbos, Friday afternoon, to let her know that I wasn't going to go out with the girl. But again, I'm sure she got the message, both the voice message and my message by calling her at the time, and she never called me again. Now, I got married without her, Baruch Hashem, but we don't want Shadchanim thinking poorly about us. So let me be the guy who did all the stupid things when I was young. You don't have to be that guy. If there's any problem, especially people that know me, if you don't know me, you can get in touch with me. If you need someone to be that bad guy, let me be the bad guy. You don't have to be that bad guy. You want all the Shadchanim, whether it's somebody you met with or somebody who just thought of you because there was all this networking, that you should be on their good side, not on their bad side. So again, keep everything, be polite, be gracious. You want them to remember you in a positive light so that when somebody else does come up, they'll be willing to set you up. And I give the floor over back over to Rabbi Zimmerman.
Thank you.
You didn't ask him about his second marriage, did you? You didn't want to ask about how that happened? Set up by his first wife. So, dating etiquette was, we're getting into dating etiquette now. How are you supposed to set yourself up? Guys, take a deep whiff of this room right now. Yeah, you know what this smells like? Again, a bunch of guys who have not showered since Friday, who are eating barbecue wings, right? Who are sitting together and, you know, just having a good time together with a little bit of heat. It's about 75 degrees inside here. That's what it smells like. Okay? Here is your first thing. Dating etiquette-wise, you must do the following. Shower. Comb your hair. Yeah, I don't care how much hair you have. Comb your hair. Brush your teeth. Use mouthwash. If you don't brush your teeth and use mouthwash now, do it. This is, it's a smart thing to do. It's a smart thing to do. Important. Clothes are all clean. You got to make sure. Give yourself a once look over. I know you're machbid. You're all machmir that you don't look at mirrors. You're all very, very careful. You follow Rav Yonasan Eibshitz to the T that guys shouldn't look at mirrors. Look at a mirror for the first and possibly last time in your life. And you'll go ahead and take care of yourself. Make sure that your zipper is up. 5 guys have told me that on their first date, they had a problem because their zipper was down and they had no idea how to be able to take care of that while they're in the middle of their first date. You know what the answer is? You don't. Okay? You just deal with it. You just deal with it because you have no way of taking care of that. A belt, no suspenders, ever, ever on a date. You want to start wearing suspenders? When you turn 70, I'll buy you your first pair of suspenders. Just remind me, I'll get you your first pair of suspenders. But you ain't wearing suspenders on a regular date. Wear a normal belt. Show a little bit of effort. Just show effort. When it comes to a date, when it comes to any date, when you're dating anybody, when you're going anywhere, show a little bit of effort so that you show, look, this is who I am, this is what I want to be, and not just the little schlump slob that you've been used to because you sit by yourself and you do all these things, this is what everybody else is doing. There are 3 modes of dress that you have. There is the mode of dress that is more yeshivish, the jacket, hat, the tie, the white shirt, everything set. Right, and of course, because they're yeshivish, they probably have some dark pink socks or something like that, right? But either way, but there's the yeshivish mode of dress. There's the quasi-modern yeshivish type of dress, which could be like a colored shirt, still a jacket, maybe like regular slacks and a jacket on top, making yourself look nice, which is like business casual, we'll call it, something like that. And then there is the casual type dress, right, where a person is just wearing his regular clothing, but again, looking nice. Girls do not understand that shirts look better when they're untucked. They don't get it, okay? They don't get it. They look at you, and if they see the shirt is untucked, they think, just like your principal did when you were in 7th grade or 9th grade, they think, this boy is in trouble. Like, that's not what they want to see. They don't want to see that, okay? They don't want to see anything like that. They want to make sure that everything's there. If you don't own collar stays for your collars, nobody wants to see a cheap $3.50 shirt with the collars going straight up in the middle of the day, where it's like leaning on one side and the other one is like hanging inside your ear. Nobody wants to see that. Collar stays are about $9.99 on Amazon. I know you don't have the internet, but for those who have, you ask your friend to get you a little bit of collar stays, get a couple collar stays, make yourself look nice. All right, make yourself look nice. If your kippah is from 1964, get yourself a new kippah. There's a place called Kesherstam, there's Rosenblum's, and there's Amazon. Figure something out. Do not get a kippah with your name on it. You're not 2. Okay? Don't get anything that has like a, there is no reason to go on a date and to have to discuss why you're wearing a Chicago Cubs kippa because they won the World Series. That is not a discussion you should be having on your date. That is sort of a like, 18th date material where you're just like, and I like the Cubs. Like, that's an okay thing to mention then. Not in those first couple times. Now, there are lists of places to go. David mentioned before that's on the website. It's 100%. They're all from me. There's a bunch of different places here in Chicago to go. If you're going out of town, prepare beforehand. Know where you're going. Figure it out. Know what type of places these are. If you could do a run-through before you go on the actual day so you're not absolutely shocked, that would be a really, really good idea. Some bad places to go, do not go to a gun range, a shooting range. Girls don't like that. Do not go to a place where you're going to have to play sports the entire time because she's probably not going to want to play sports the entire time. Don't say, like, this is all about me here. Okay? Those are bad ideas. Another thing, which, whatever, bowling is never a good idea with a girl because they're usually too embarrassed to bend down in front of the guy in front of them. Right? So that's usually going to be a bad date unless it's, well, whatever, I'm not going into that. So that's that. Now, when you have a car, all good. Make sure that you prepared your car beforehand. There should be nothing on the ground. There should be no regular stuff, whatever. It shouldn't be that you just rush in there. You don't have to get it professionally cleaned. Get it nicely cleaned. Just do a little thing. Just look around. Just look at what you have. If there's everything around, just take care of your car, okay? Just make sure it's there. If it's not, then if you're going to take an Uber or any type of cab, in Israel, I know the typical idea is that you meet somebody somewhere. Just got to figure that out beforehand. Ask friends. Ask other people. What have you done? When you did this, what was it like? Was that good? Was that a bad idea? What do you think was a good idea when it came to this? Also, you want to make sure, if the only car available is a 15-seater van, you might want to look into renting a car. Don't pick somebody up in a 15-seater van and have them have to climb up a couple steps. If you own a Suburban, or what did we talk about 2 years ago, a pickup truck, like a weirdo. Don't do stuff like that. Have a normal car, right, that a normal person would be proud to have that in their garage, that they sit there and they be there. Not somebody in the Confederate States, somebody who's in, or, like, in some, like, or in some southern country that's in South America. You don't want to have, like, somebody from, I don't mean to make a racist joke here, but from Costa Rica being like, hey, cool car, man. That's not the car that you want for one of these dates. You want it to be a nice little thing when it comes to that. Now, when it comes to conversations, obviously, there are certain things that should not be talked about on certain dates that are a little bit beyond whatever it is, but there are good conversation topics. Good conversation topics are family issues. You know, just talk about, like, how's your family? Who's in your family? I saw there might have been siblings on your shidduch resume. Tell me about this, about that, whatever it is. And remember, when it comes to any answer when it's on a date, there is never a yes or no answer when it comes to that. There is yes with a conversation afterward. No with a conversation afterward. If you're going to be that guy who's just like, yep, brothers. God, really? That's what you're going to do? That's what you're going to do. Say something. Say something. Yeah, I have six brothers. I hate them all. I hate them all. Some of them I hate a little bit more than the others. But, you know, there's a hatred for all of them. Mention something. Make it a conversation. Make everything into a conversation. There should be no reason to be able to answer with a one-word answer ever if something is an uncomfortable topic. It's okay. You don't know this girl, and you probably will never... Well, I shouldn't say that. You will see her for the rest of your life. You'll get a lot of time to deal with this. But you'll be able to say to her, listen, that's an uncomfortable topic for me. Let's go somewhere else. Now, if it's... The question was, did you ever do drugs? And you say, that's an uncomfortable topic for me. Then clearly you led the conversation in the wrong direction. That is the wrong direction that you're going in. We're kept going. You're just like, let me tell you about this drug. Let me tell you about that drug. Let me tell you that drug. And she says, have you done drugs? You're just like, what? Where would you get that impression from? Why would you ask me that question? Then you are a terrible conversationalist. You should start learning how to speak better and not just talk to guys. Talk to people that might be a little bit older where you can get around these conversations and they become a little bit more normal. Now, all experiences, like yeshiva, seminary, school experiences. If you have a couple stories, start thinking of them. Use them over and over and over again so that they become that type of idea where you're just like, yeah, I'll remember when I was there and whatever it is. And you can always bring up topics from the beginning of the day toward the end of the day. Remember we talked about that? Hey, let's go on about that. I've got another story that's similar to that. You want to start thinking about that. Think about trips that you took, places that you went to different places. Think about ideas where one time I was on this trip and I had to have a stopover in this place and I remember being this, etc. Like things like that. Just think about all these cool experiences that you've had that you can start bringing up when it comes to this. And remember, you can always rely on your memory being jogged because obviously you're going to be talking about different things. Each one of your memories will be jogged, but you want to do that. Vacation spots are huge because you can start speaking about all these different things and it also tells you a lot about a person when you hear about the types of vacations that their family is taking. If you're only hearing Miami, 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 you know what kind of a family it is. On the other hand, if you hear about this hiking trip and about this type of camping trip, well, that's that. You are your own person. Are you the type of person who's going to want to go to Miami? Well, I don't know why anybody wouldn't, but like that, where you're just going to Miami and that's that? Or are you the type of person who wants a little bit of an experience, something out there? What kind of experiences has she had is a huge thing on what makes her the person that she is. Those are big things. Interests. What kind of interests do you have that you're really interested in? Be careful with this because you don't want to be a really, really weird guy. So you want to think, like, what really interests you? If your interests are sports, okay, bring that up in a way. Like, do you ever watch sports? Do you have anything to do with sports? What have you done in the past? Maybe you'll find somebody who actually does, and maybe it's just going to be no. Well, what do you have that you can talk about to somebody who is a non-sports person? Like, if she says, oh, no, I hate baseball. You hate baseball? Let me tell you something about baseball. You want to make it an exciting conversation, but you want her to understand where you're coming from so that she understands why you might like baseball so much. That's a great conversation topic that helps her get involved and tries to make her see. Do you understand how chess works? Why does chess work as a game? If chess works as a game, can you understand how that would apply to a pitcher and a batter type of relationship? How that would go together? Like those types of things. Just bring it up in such a way. And then food. And that can be a dangerous topic for her, but it's not for you, so you'll be okay. Food topics, like food. What are your favorite foods? What do you like what do you like eating? What do you not like eating? Now, again, you want to be very careful. I only eat filet mignon, and I try my hardest to just drink beer at all times. That's what I have. If I can't find enough good beer, then I go for whiskey, straight up. That's what I do. You want to be careful with something like that. If you're getting yourself drunk on vodka every night, don't talk about that. That is not a good topic. That's something you should tell me. And I'd love to speak to you about that. That's a really good topic that we can have as a conversation. But for you and a girl on a date is a really bad idea to put those all together to be able to go through. Those are the types of conversations. As time goes on, right, these are like good beginning conversations and you want to go a little bit deeper. You want to start asking more about these things. Not in the, whatever, you know, but as time goes on, you want to start asking, like, what has made you into the person that you are? What kind of things have you gone through? And as time goes on, you yourself are going to want to talk about your experiences that may have been a little bit negative. You don't bring that up. First date, first conversation. So, back in the day when I was in the, you know, the asylum. Well, it's going to be a great topic. It's going to be a great conversation. Things are going to be good. But that might not be the best thing to be able to start off with. You want to be careful about these types of things. As time goes on, you'll get through. Length of dates. You want to be careful with these types of things. Everybody knows themselves. You know yourself. But you don't want to get yourself into a position where things are awkward, where things get a little bit awkward. There's no reason for that. That's why first dates with certain girls are usually should be kept to a little bit smaller than the later dates. Meaning, why go out for more than two and a half hours on a first date when, again, you might have the ride there, you have the ride back, you got to keep those in mind. But as time goes on, if things are good, then you'll be able to go there. And it could be you'll be able to get up to 3 hours, maybe 3.5 hours, maybe 4 hours. But you got to keep a cap at somewhere. It's never good to have a 6-7 hour date. Emotionally, you get drained. You're exhausted. She might be exhausted, but you don't want to show it. You don't want to reel it. And each one of you might even have a challenge. I remember there was a date where somebody went on. It was almost like a 13-hour date. And they were sitting there, and they were just like, neither one of them wanted to stay. I wanted to go home. I'm like, you guys are both immature little children. You have to be able to say, this is ridiculous. The date is over now. It's been way too long. Let's be done with this. Let's go somewhere else. I'll take you home, and we'll continue our marathon a little bit later. This is just ridiculous. It just shouldn't be this way where all of a sudden you're going on a crazy long date. There is no reason for something like that, no matter how long it goes, aside from the fact that the more emotionally involved you get with a girl, I think everybody here understands that, the more the desire is for you to touch them or to hug them or to do etc., which we obviously are not looking at as something that's even a bit of it. You got to be careful with things like that. So you want to cut things short before they get a little bit difficult for any person that's around. That's the idea behind it when it comes to dating etiquette. Now, those are the main things that we want to go into. When you get deep into dating, when you're really trying to get into dropping the shotgun or whoever the people are in charge that you guys are talking to each other, just be careful. I've seen a lot of things go badly as soon as they drop the shotgun or they drop their friends, you know, from being involved and they started talking to the girl directly. Because you might talk too much. You might not be ready for a relationship, and especially nowadays with a texting relationship where you're texting each other constantly and you don't have any time for that. You've got a life. You've got a life right now. And although this girl seems like a really good girl, a person who's over-texting, right? It could be a bit much for you. So dropping a shadchan, you never want to do it too early. But on the other hand, you don't want it to just drag out when you're dealing with somebody. And especially with friends, you're going to drop them earlier than you would a regular shadchan. Shadchan is going to want to be involved for this reason. You don't want things to progress too quickly and then all of a sudden it just fizzles out. Like everything's all gone. You had like the Hollywood, the Disney World type of fireworks going on and everything's all good, but then all of a sudden it just fizzles out because there was nothing really there. It was just the outside things that were so good. You happened to be a tremendously good person and she happens to be a tremendously good person and it just worked out so well, but you had nothing really in common and it was just... That's why a shadchan is so important to keep in mind, to have them there together. Yes, they want you to date and eventually get married so that they get paid. I totally understand that. That's 100% true. But on the other hand, they also want someone that's the best for you because they know what does become a pockmark on their record is somebody who eventually breaks it off and says it was the shadchan's fault. They understand that. They know that. And they have to be careful. They are careful as much as they can be when it comes to these things. Just be careful as things go on. Deeper conversations. Truth is, I do tell this to people a lot and I like this a lot. You should not be getting married until you have a disagreement with the person. If you're agreeing about everything, then you both are not human. You're both absolutely not human. There should be some disagreements, and that's okay. We're human. We're supposed to disagree. You can't argue with her the way you argue with a guy, you know, throwing down a safer at him, like slapping him in the face and like throwing something, you know, throwing the chair to the side. Maybe that's not the best way to argue with people, but regardless, right, you shouldn't argue in that way. But to have a normal conversation in which you argue and you disagree completely. You really think she's absolutely wrong. But you're able to get back into another conversation and topic without a hitch. It's not like, okay, so we're never speaking ever again. If that's the problem, then you're never going to be able to date this girl ever again. There's no way. You have to be able to find a way where you can argue, you can have a disagreement, you can say, yeah, I don't think that's right. I think it's more like this. But then go into something else. There have been, I know this is crazy, Trump supporters have been married to Clinton supporters, and it's worked out okay. Not great, but it has worked out okay. They have to be able to find a way to argue without the screaming matches, without the throwdowns, without everything else that goes with it. If you don't want to go to the women's march, totally okay with that, right? But can she go? Are you going to be okay with her going to something like that? Those are types of conversations where you might not want to bring up on the first date. So do you go to the women's march? That's not the first thing you bring up. It was on Shabbos, right? How do you get there? Oh, you walked. You sure it's Chumen? Are you okay with that? Right? Yeah? Were you holding a placard? Is there an Erev down there? How from are you? Those are not the conversations that you want to get into. These are the types of things you want to watch out for. Take it slowly. But as time goes on, you do want to find out these types of things. What kind of person is she really? Is she really deep down where she gets into? And that's what I'm talking about, where you get into the family type issues. If you yourself have something that is a personal, it is a sensitive topic, something, if there's a disease in the family, chas v'shalom, if there's something that you've had as an experience in the past that maybe, you know, you feel is an important part of where you were, but no longer is who you are, if you want to bring that up, it is good to bring that up a little bit later. And each person is individual when it comes to that. This is a subjective subject. For each person, that's going to be their own thing. When you bring these types of topics up, there is no fourth date, must be said, 12 minutes into the date. It's not like that. Each person has their time of when they want to bring something up, of something that they have. If you have seen somebody, talked to somebody, had something, etc., that type of thing, then you bring it up in your own good time, but you need advice. You definitely need to speak to people about those types of things as time goes on. There are red flags out there. There are definitely some red flags out there. If you see her kicking a cat as you're walking down the street, I mean, maybe you're sadistic and that's fine, but like, unless that happens, you want to be a little bit careful with that. Why is she doing that? What's going on over here when it comes to stuff like that? You do want to check, and I mean this honestly, when it comes to from kite stuff, you do want to watch out for it. Are there things where she's clearly doing something which you think is against halacha? Maybe she has a different shita, but she has it. How to bring that up on dates, right? How to bring it up? I knew somebody who brought up with a girl on one of the first dates they went out with. She was wearing a bright red shirt. Bright red shirt. So girls sometimes wear bright red shirts. Some do, some don't, right? But they happen to be something that most guys know, like, oh, girls don't wear red. So he brought it up and he said, what's going on? I see you're wearing a red shirt. And she went on a whole soliloquy about how it's okay to wear a red shirt and everything's okay. That was not a topic to bring up then. That's a topic to bring up later. later. If she holds that way, so find out. Listen, I'm a guy. I'm a stupid guy. I didn't go to seminary, so I know no Navi whatsoever. Explain to me, why is it that some people think that it's not okay to wear red? Is that okay or is it not okay? Explain to me in that way. Right? And then you hear it, because then she already knows you, then she's already that. And that's when you bring up a subject like that, where in a good way, you want to find out where she's holding and what she's doing. I know a guy that just talked to me about a couple weeks ago and said that this is an interesting topic, where the girl said she was wearing, and again, each person is different in this, but she was wearing shirts on the date that came above the elbow, right? And where the skirt went right to the knee, and just to the knee. And he said, listen, I have sisters, this guy told me, and I said, I expect them to wear it below their knee and below their elbow. So I said, so what did you bring it up on the date itself? He's been going out for 5-6 times. I said, did you bring it up on the date itself? He said, no. I said, does she have somebody is there an in-between? Is there somebody there? He said, no, we already dropped the shotgun. So I said, so on the next date, I'd like you to bring it up and say like that. I also mentioned like this, what kind of a person is she when she wears something like that? Is she perfectly fine? Or if she's somebody who, when she sits down and she sits down on the date, does she pull the skirt over her knees, even though it's clearly up to there? Is she somebody who's like pulling it down a little bit? That tells you something about the person. Now, every person to their own when it comes to something like that, right? When it comes to tznius, when it comes to girls, right? Everybody has to judge their own, what they want for themselves, and figure out what they're going to do, right? So, your own experiences aside, in each case, you have to figure out, how is this girl treating it? And he did. He brought it up. She said, this is what I hold. And he said, I'm not comfortable with that. And unfortunately, they broke it off. That's not something that he wanted for himself, even though that's what she held. Now, that's perfectly fine. You just have to be able to go through. Parents and in-laws, when you first get down to the date itself, it's possible when you get you drive up in the car itself, it depends on which date, etc., you may have to go up to the house, knock on the door, and the parents are going to invite them in. Now, I'm for sure going to do that. My daughter right now is 16 years old, and I've not found the right goat yet, so I have not yet married her off. But when that does happen, I can guarantee you right now, I am 100% making the guy come up to the door, having him sit down, and I'm having him recite to me all of the Treyasser. 100%, without a question, it's the first thing I'm going to do. And why? I just want to see his reaction. I have no other reason. I am 100%. I just want to see like what he's going to say. So I don't know. And I'm just going to be like, that's good. Go ahead. I realize I have no other reason other than doing that. I am sure I'm going to have a bunch of things like that. I'm going to have like a whole list of things where I'm going to sit them down, and I'm probably going to make them extremely uncomfortable. Like sit them down in a chair that's just a little too tight. You know what I'm talking about? Like a little kid's chair, like have them sit right down there in like a little rocking chair, right? And I sit down and like, you know, on the couch, like put my feet up and whatever, and just say like, are you feeling comfortable? And you're just like, no, not really. Why not? I know. As a future parent of a girl who's going to be dating, never. So I know what I'm going to start thinking of and what I'm going to do. All parents are like this. We're all evil. We're all evil, every single one of us. And every single one of us want our daughter to marry the absolute best, the greatest, much greater than anybody else out there. I want the absolute best. And when it comes to that, there's different ways of going about it. So you have to be careful. You're going into it, know that you're going to have a terrible, terrible experience the first time you meet your father. Maybe he's going to fake it. Maybe he's going to be like, it's so nice to meet you. Everything should be good. Have a good time. That's possible. Probably not. Everything will be okay. Okay? And you don't have to get yourself too nervous. Don't study. Don't have like little clip notes in your pocket ready to go when you're out there. But that's out there. Another thing. And I know with social media and everything like this, you just got to be, it has to be said. Your phone should not be on during the entire date. Your phone should not be on when meeting with the shotgun before. Your phone should not be around. It shouldn't be on. Now, you have to make sure, the same way you go into davening, or you should go into davening, and you turn your phone on silent before anything happens. Yeah. So when you turn it on right before you get in there, it should be the exact same way with the date. Have the phone on silent, if not off completely, and put it aside. Do not think to yourself, if she gets up to go to the washroom in the middle of the day, perfect, I can go check my messages and start texting back. She's going to catch you on the way back, and that's totally inappropriate. It's okay to space out for a couple minutes, okay? Space out for a couple minutes instead of looking at your phone. It's probably good. You know what you can think about? Think about balloons. Think about balloons. Think about where balloons go after they float up into the air. That's a tremendous thing to think about. You want another thing to think about? Think about how grass grows. And the different types of grasses. That's amazing. You'll sit there when she comes back and is like, I'm sorry it took so long. Be like, no, please, please. I was thinking about grass, right? That's great. That's great. Isn't that? And then you have another conversation topic. Why were you thinking about grass? Oh, there was a rabbi one. That's a great topic. All of a sudden you get to where, oh, you can have this happen. Everything's all good. Okay, so these are all important topics of getting yourself close to where you need to go and how you need to get there. Things like that. Those types of things. Now, just know, all right, we're not going to get into the in-law type of thing when we'll go through there. What do you do when things start to become a little bit too stagnant? When things are just stagnant, they're staying where they are and you're not going anywhere and you don't know what to do now. Well, there's a bunch of different things you can try. I have personally told people, I think this is the most brilliant thing ever. Just Google 50 things to talk about on a date. 50 things to talk about on a date. I forgot exactly what the wording is, but you're going to get to a website that is 50 things to ask your date that will decide whether you're married for each other or not. I have it somewhere, and I probably should give it to you. They're unbelievable questions that help you understand where the person is coming. And this is what you do. You don't quiz her and grill her with that. You print out a bunch of different questions that are on that list. Like one of them is like, if you had three people that you would meet, who are those three people? Right? Alive and dead. Alive and dead. That tells you a lot about a person, right? If the person says, I don't know, Hitler, Yamal Shemo, Stalin, and like, you know, whatever. You can say like, well, it's been fun. I had a whole conversation topics here, but we are out, right? Right? Yeah, I really want to know who that third person would be. but you sit there like that, but it would be interesting to know, and that's something for you. Like, these types of questions are so big. Like, the type of thing, if you were an animal, what kind of animal would you be? Right? Tells a lot about a person if a person says a tiny little mouse, right? Or a great big lion. That tells you type A personality versus a type Z, right? That tells you a lot about each person. There are all these great questions that are out there. When things become a little stagnant, these are the types of things you want to do. You want to start a different type of conversation. You want to play a game that lets you know a little bit more about the person. Stuff you might have known a lot. You might know a real lot about the person, but that's around the type of thing you want to start new conversations that you've never had before, new things that are out there. However, there are times where the stagnation, where the reason why this dating is not going so well is because you've got to move on to the next step. It depends on every person. Some people are the type of guys who need to get married after one date. Okay? Those people are freaks. Or chassidim. I'm okay with that. I'm not making fun of an entire system. That's that. There are some people who feel like a couple dates are good enough, right? You knew about the person quite a bit beforehand, where you knew what the person was like and those types of things, and you found out about this and that and the other. So after a couple dates, what else is there to know? I totally hear that also. But is the girl like that? Is the girl going to be like that? There are a couple people that need weeks, a couple people that need months. I personally suggest that, depending, whatever, that around a month and a half to 2 months is a good time for dating. Good time for dating, in which it's time to really start thinking, is this the right person? It could be a little bit less. It could be a little bit more. But getting to more, you've got to be really careful. If it's an out-of-town date, out-of-town dating is very, very different, and each person is different. It all depends. In-town dating, where the person lives a block away from you, it might be a little bit quicker. And it might be that only after a couple weeks, you'll figure out that this is the right person. If everything else goes well, you might feel like this is the time to do it. But everybody is totally different on this. But you have to remember, the amount of dates that you see her by, if you're seeing her, let's say, two or three times a week, right? So that's, if once you get through a month, you're dealing with about 12 times altogether that you've seen her. What do you need to know and how far do you need there? Remember, this is a difficult subject when it comes to anything, but especially from Jews. Yeah, we have taivas. Our taivas are there and they're strong and they're extremely powerful. We have to be careful that when we're putting ourselves in those positions, we're not allowing ourselves to go off a little bit. Yichud is a major issue when it comes to a lot of these dates. You cannot put yourself in a locked room. I know, it's an awesome game, getting in a locked room and doing all those things, but you cannot put yourself in a locked room with a girl. Halachically, that's not going to be allowed. So how are you going to allow that? How can you make that happen? Like, sitting there with the girl in the room trying to figure out the way out, right? If you don't find your way out ever, then you're there until you die. That's what they tell me. I think that's the way it works. I'm pretty sure. But I haven't tried it because I'm too scared. So I would assume that that's how it all goes. You just got to be careful when it comes to that. However many weeks, months you want to get into this, at some point it becomes, are you ready to get engaged? Is this the right girl for you? Three things is what I tell people when it comes to this. Number one, are the looks there? Now, when I say by looks, we mean like this. It's okay if you feel that you are not, if she's not beautiful. She's not beautiful. She will be as time goes on when everything works out well. but she has to be someone where the looks keep going up. Where the looks, you feel, I'm getting more attracted to her as time goes on. Because the personality is adding on to those looks and making it even better for me. It has to be something like that. Maybe they can remain status quo for a little bit, but it's got to be that the looks are always feeling, I feel like this is a person that I can really be involved with as time goes on. That's number one when it comes to looks itself. Number two, is this my best friend material? Is this person going to be my best friend? Am I going to be able to talk to her about anything out there? Is that going to be possible? Or is this a person where I've got to keep too many subjects taboo? I can't deal with that. Best friend material is my number two. That's what I want to go with. What kind of a person is that? And number three, are there a lot of annoyances? A lot of negatives here? How many negatives are there? There's a couple negatives, then good. She's a human being. Great. There's a bunch of annoyances, a bunch of negatives. I hate her laugh. I think her laugh sounds like Fran Deschler. Is that her name? I forgot what her name is. The really annoying person? Back in the day, like if she's got that laugh that's just unbelievably annoying, if she's a person who every time she walks, she trips on her own feet, right? If she's somebody who she can't stand anything that I wear or that I do, okay, you've got some issues here. That might be someone that you're going to say no to. But I mean this honestly, when it comes to annoyances, you want to count them up. How many are there? What are we dealing with when it comes to stuff like that? You got to be very careful with stuff like that, how much there. But if those three are taken care of, I'm not getting annoyed by her. I feel like she has best friend material, and I feel that her looks are really good. I am attracted to her. You've got all three. That's the time where it's about where you can say, okay, our conversations are good. Things are happening. I feel like this is the right person. That's where engagement comes through. We did through the dating. You've got to discuss this with people. And again, it goes back to the mentor that we talked about before. You've got to discuss it. You must ask permission from her parents beforehand. I would always suggest, unless there's some absolute terrible issues that are involved over here, you must meet her parents and some of her siblings. She's got to meet your parents and some of your siblings before anything happens. There's got to be some type of connection. You don't realize how big your family is when you're engaged. You need everyone involved. Everyone has to be there. And if there's major issues and people are going crazy and you can't talk to your parents about X, Y, and Z, it's going to be horrible on your relationship. Things are going to go badly. It's just not there. You need to meet and you need to make peace with one another. Things need to be okay before anything happens. And that's important. You ask her father for permission before and you call him up and say, I would like to get engaged to your daughter. You have to say those words, not just imply it. You have to say it straight out and he has to say yes. If he has not said yes, do not get engaged. Do not go home and surprise him and be like, Mazda, we're engaged. I'm telling you, if somebody would do that to me, he will be dead, absolutely dead, without any question by morning. And no one will have any, there is no way the cops are going to find it. No way. I know I'm taping, it doesn't make a difference. No one will be able to know. There is nobody who wants that to happen. It's the worst feeling in the world. It's the worst feeling in the world when it comes to stuff like that. And it's a rule. There is no phone and there is no posting of anything for 30 minutes. It is extremely important to do that. Tell your friends to stay quiet. Your parents should not be finding out from a Facebook post. That should not be happening. There is no reason for them to have an Instagram picture going up, like, Rabbi Zimmerman is engaged. And my parents are like, what? He's married. That should not be happening ever. You never want something like that to happen. You need to make sure you have some time after it happens. Once you get engaged, mazel tov, everything should be good. Spend some time, talk with her a little bit, have everything go through. And then afterward, you call parents. Here's the important point. Parents first, okay? Your major mentor second, and your friends third. I know friends feel like they're more important than God. They're not. And they should not be the ones posting the news before anybody else finds. They are by far, it goes in that order so that no one gets insulted and everyone there. By the way, that's the same thing at a wedding. When everybody's dancing at your wedding, it's family first, and then mentor second, and then the weird friends. Okay? They're drunk anyway. They don't care. Right? But it always has to be. You always go with the hierarchy of where it goes because otherwise you're running into problems. And I know there's that one friend that you told who's standing on the side taking the pictures everywhere. Right? Who's standing around there and he's like posting it everywhere. You tell that guy to break his thumbs for a half an hour so that he doesn't do anything until you get done what needs to get done. Okay? Those are the important things when it comes to this. And these are important when it comes through. all right, there's so many different things that you have to go through, and this is not the time to be able to go through all of them. But these are the deep into dating, the getting engaged types of things. Remember, it might not be, I'll just say it outright. Getting engaged is the worst time of your life. You will never have a worse time of your life. It will be the absolute worst time for everything. It's the worst. It's the worst. Ask anyone who's ever been engaged. They will, unless the marriage went worse, but usually it's, engagement is by far the worst time. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to do. You're trying to get yourself to the date. Everybody's arguing about this, that, and the other. You really wanted pink for the bridesmaids, and they really wanted dark blue and purple, right? And there's all things going on where you're just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to handle this. If you thought you didn't have enough time beforehand, you will never have enough time when you're engaged. There's never enough time. How many people tell me that they haven't gone on a date with their chasanim since before they got engaged? Yeah, it's really, really difficult. I've always suggested to every guy, get out of town if you can. Get out of town. Just leave town. Make sure you are not in town during the engagement process. If you have any way of doing that, legit, you know, not like go to Tijuana and, you know, find yourself there. I mean, like you have a legitimate way of getting out of town. Extremely important. Extremely important. Like I found myself in Israel for 6 months before my wedding, for 4 months before my wedding, and it was the greatest time of my life. And then my wife joined me in Eretz Israel, and I was like, "Are you serious?" It was great. It was great. But on the other hand, it would have been greater, right? If everything, it's hard. It's really difficult to find time when there's no time and to be involved with all the different issues. It gets very, very difficult. And there's no way to really make up with her afterward, right? These fights are going to happen one after the other and you won't really know what to do. It's extremely difficult. You have to get used to getting into fights. Listen, your father-in-law and your mother-in-law will hate you for a couple months. Eventually they'll love you because they'll know your personality and they'll really, really like you, right? And everything will work out okay. But there are going to be times where they're going to be extremely angry. Your parents are going to be extremely angry at your kala. It's going to happen. There's going to be things like that. And you just have to smile and break your way through it. And things will be okay. And if you get into a couple fights, just get a couple brass knuckles, right? I think they're trying to stop everybody from, you know, concealed carry in most, you know, shuls and stores. But yeah, okay, maybe not that. But either way, figure out a way where you can calm yourself down. And by the way, a soothing, calming technique, which is extremely effective, extremely effective. And I found it many, many times, and I've told it to many, many people, is taking a drive downtown. Just taking a drive downtown. Going through. I don't mean getting into car accidents, not a good idea, but I mean just driving on a highway with or without your kala, listening to music in the background, obviously Jewish. If you need suggestions, just call me later, right? And go down there and just figure it out and just take a drive and deal with it. It's going to cost you $140 in gas. Okay, welcome to our world. Go get a Prius. So figure it out, right? And do that. It's extremely calming, extremely soothing. You see, you can bring yourself back and you get yourself back into it. You can have a small conversation, even if you're in a bad fight or something's happening, whatever. You pull your car into the car, just say, let's go for a drive. You take a drive and just look around while you're driving, don't. But like you have everybody else, you know, you just figure everything out. Things will get calmer that way. It's a very, very important technique. Now, those are the main things that we wanted to go into. Is there anything else that we should bring up, Rabbi Sheinfeld, before we go into questions?
No, I mean, just the dating process, as I mentioned multiple times, is intellectual, emotional, and it's a very private process. Obviously, it's private going on between the two of you, but it's also public in as much as you need to have that mentor involved. I was going to mention the mentor in the beginning and mention the mentor through. You need an outside perspective about positives and or negatives that you feel did or didn't happen on a date. And the more and more you go into a relationship, the deeper you get, the harder it will be for you to make intelligent decisions. And therefore you need to have that outside mentor person, you know, that you can bounce it off of. You know, proper behavior on a date, or as Zimmer mentioned, yichud, it's very possible to have yichud in a hotel lobby. You know, if it's getting late at night and there's no one around there except the desk clerk who could care less about what you are or aren't doing, that also could be yichud. You know, you have to be on top of the game and don't trust yourself. Don't trust yourself. You know, walking down the street, you know, depending on where you are, what you are, could be yichud. And for sure, the more you get involved, especially once you're engaged and you're spending Shabbos, you know, at the house, not obviously not sleeping there, but You know, chazan and kala, especially if they don't have time, Friday night is a time when there's nothing else to do. They'll stay up late talking, and everyone else is going to fall asleep. In her parents' house, could very well be yichud in the living room. It's always ask a shayla, don't trust yourself, and please, please, please err on the side of caution. And just keep in mind, you need to be relaxed. Rabbi Zimmern also made a comment about things growing stagnant or things to talk about. In my experience is, especially when you're going on out-of-town dates, you have to be careful to not go with the urge of cramming in too many dates, because sof ko sof, you're two regular people that live the same lives every day in, day out, and not that much happens to you on a daily basis. And if you're cramming 2-3 dates in a row, 3 days in a row, you're going to, unfortunately, artificially run out of things to talk about and feel there's no way for this relationship to develop, when in fact, if there had been given more time and more breathing room, things may have developed properly. So it's something you're going to want to keep in mind. And again, as Rabbi Zimmern has mentioned many times, the whole dating process is individualized for you and for whoever the girl will be. And as things go on, it'll be individualized. And you just need to talk to your mentor, whoever that is, and not feel, well, you know, this is a romantic, emotional decision. What does it matter what everybody else thinks? You're right, it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks about who you're going out with. But it does matter so that other people can be giving you proper, good advice to prevent something bad from going on, making a poor, you know, life decision. With that, you know, I would wish you much hatzlacha. You know, Rabbi Zimmern didn't so much get involved into where, you know, maybe doing something more fun on a date, you know, may come. And that also will be individualized. Yes, it's very boring going on a sit-down date for the first or second or third date with someone you've never met before. But that's what's so important, because anybody can have fun with someone else, or you can have fun with many other people doing fun things. The trick is to find out what you do or don't have in common, and then doing something fun can also break something stagnant, because you can do something that is more relaxing and then, you know, go sit down and talk.
Yeah, the truth is, I don't like coffee. So a coffee date for me was always like, can I have an apple juice, please? Those are, she's ordering like a nice coffee and I'm ordering like a, you know, like an apple juice or a milk, depending on where we are. That's awkward. So you don't want to get involved with that. You got to make sure that you have a date that's good for you as well. I typically like the walking type dates, and I would always tell the shadchan beforehand that tell the girl not to wear high heels, because I'm not a high heel type of person, so that they can walk around. That would be a much better thing, you know, for the types of dates that I go on. I'm just not a sit down type of guy, but there are people that like that. So you have to also discuss with whoever's helping you set up the date to figure out the right type of date for you and for her. To try and make those together. David, you said you wanted to add on something. Which?
Well,
maybe
mention the whole rabbi bracelet
thing. Oh, I should mention that. Fine, there is important stuff. You know, it does get down when you're getting into engagement. You know, the minhag that has been recent, I'd say within the last like 25, 30 years, is that there's two things that you get for the girl when you get engaged. One thing is a bracelet, and the next thing is the ring. Okay, typically speaking, girls are girls. They don't want you picking out their ring for them, their engagement ring. They probably will kill you. It's not a good idea to get engaged with the ring. It's better to get engaged with a cheaper type bracelet, and then that will lead so that she can go and get her engagement ring. Obviously, you join her for whatever it is, but you get her the bracelet, and then you get the ring. If you feel you know the girl well enough, or you have her friends on your side, where they can go get a ring that they know that she would like, okay, that's a different story, everything's different, but typically that's that. Price range-wise, and again, you gotta keep this in your head, bracelets are range in all different types. There are people that will go $200 to $300 and all the way up to about $2,500 for a bracelet. You've got to figure it out. I would say the average, and again, this is different by everybody, the average is around $700 to $800 for a bracelet, around that amount. There is no problem with going $200 to $300 as long as it's a really nice looking bracelet, even if it's not real, so to speak, but there's no problem with doing that, but it's got to be something that looks and is really nice, and her friends or her parents have to be okay with it. You should show it to them so that they know what you're doing. Even if you want to keep it a secret, show people so that they know what you're doing. When it comes to the ring itself, the ring is anywhere. I mean, if you know a guy who knows a guy who kind of knows a guy, right? Then you can get them at around $3,000. But the truth is, you're dealing up to, I don't know, Florida. So figure it all out from there. It's the average, I would say, and it, again, it depends on the person, is around $4,000 to $5,000. It definitely can be more. It definitely can be less. You just want to be careful, right, that you don't overspend and you don't underspend. Again, her expectations are very different. She's got friends. She wants to show off the ring. It's the first thing that girls ask each other after they get engaged. After they get engaged, what's the ring like? Where's the ring? Show me the ring. They want that ring, and they want it to be special. You need help with this. This is not a guy thing. You should not be like, oh, that looks great. That's not going to work. It's not. You should not be involved in any of this. No matter how good you think your taste is, you're a guy. You're a guy. Just remember your place. You are that guy, okay, when it comes to that. There are other customs that came along as time went on where the Kala gets the chasen a set of shas. She gets him cufflinks. She gets him a chasen watch. Whatever your minig is, your custom is, you deal with that at the time. Everybody will figure out these types of things as time goes on. You definitely should get presents at certain moments within the dating. Birthdays are another issue altogether. That's something you got to talk with your mentor. If the birthday happens after the first date and you're like, should I get her a car? It's probably not a good idea, right, to go through. But you want to figure out things as time goes on. If she has a birthday while you're engaged, what can you get? What can you not get? Very important thing, very important tip, because this is what happened not too long ago. You got to be very careful when giving the ring that you don't say the words, Hareya at Mekudeshes Li B'Tabaz Zu, right? Or Hareya at Mekudeshes Li in any way, shape, or form. Even if you say the words, will you marry me? While getting down on one knee, of course, you little cutie, right? You get down and you say it and then give it to the girl after when she says yes, is a suffix, possible suffix kiddushin. So you want to be careful about that just because there's no reason for you guys to have Arison right then, unless you're in Yehuda, but there's no reason for you to have Arison right then. Instead, you should keep it, wait until someone's around. If there's any Adam around there, and granted, your friends are probably not kosher Adam, but if there's any way that you can get around that, it really would be the following, where you give the bracelet and you say, will you marry me? But you got to be careful with how you do that. No, you know what? We'll go for a rabbi mentor right before you get engaged, just to make sure that you're saying the right things and you're doing it in the right way, and that you're not putting yourself in the wrong position when it comes to that. But all those are very important when it comes to that. Is there anything else you wanted to add on to that?
Not to that, but I think it's also important that a lot of times when you're engaged or when you're dating, sometimes it's important to take a step back. And if when you're engaged and the most stressful part about being engaged is registering. You go to Bed Bath & Beyond and you register for all your gifts. It is not worth the fight because you want these swirls on your plates and you want the silverware that has whatever design. Let her pick out the stuff. Let her get her way in the engagement. The girl literally picked out her wedding since she was 2 years old. You haven't thought about your wedding until the day of your wedding. Let her get what she wants. Take a step back and trust me, it will help.
As Rabbi Sure, it's not, said, it's not worth the fight? The
it's
swirls?
Not worth the fight. As Rabbi Sheinfeld said, let us make the mistakes. I made this mistake. It was a lot of fights. Yeah. Thank God we're very happy now. But just, you know.
Who won?
She won. Let her win. Also, let the wife win. Just take a step back. So a lot of times, just, you know, it's more important to just make her happy than for you to get your way on, you know, what color your towels are going to be in your house.
I do agree with that. It really doesn't matter what color your towels will be because they'll probably be washed with your hands and they'll become disgusting soon enough. Obviously, with everything else, guys, you have to be careful with all types of tzniyas issues once you get engaged. Just be more and more and more careful. Okay, marriage is another issue altogether. It is a massive beast, and there are so many things that come with it. For right now, right, we're in the dating, engagement stage with everything else. We should only be zilkah to great things. Now, we are going to take questions. We have until 9:43, basically, to take questions. Are there any, if anybody has a private question, there are cards that could be handed in so that we don't know who you are, but if you are the only person who had a card, that's perfectly fine. But are there questions? Yeah.
It's kind of, there's a few parts of it, but it's based on one question, which is my parents' view of dating, and maybe this view of dating is very different.
Yeah. If your parents or anything, anybody else that you have, if you yourself feel that your dating experience is going to be different from that, that's perfectly fine. all of these ideas are still there, even if you're not using a specific shadchan or if you're not dealing with any specific people. It's going to be there, yeah.
No, no. You understand me. They don't think I should be dating until I'm like 30 years old, and that I should be dating for about a year, and then I don't even know if they want me to use shadchan if at all.
Then that's going to be, at the end of the day, with all these things, you've got to figure this out together with your parents beforehand. If you have a view that's very different from what your parents think, you have to explain to them and tell them why you think it should be different. And if you can't explain it to them, it's going to be very, very hard for you to explain it to a girl, right? Or for you to explain to a shadchan why you feel you're ready to get married. You're going to have to explain it to them. And trust me, all parents understand at the end of the day, as long as it makes sense. It's got to make sense. And if you have a plan, an idea, something that makes sense for you, then that's there. If they feel that you should be dating for an entire year, you're going to have to explain to them why you feel that is not the right reason, why you feel that you're going to get too emotionally involved without the physical aspects of the marriage, the physical aspects that only come with marriage, and why you feel it's there. And you're going to have to explain it to them. By every person, it's different. But you're going to have that conversation with them and be very clear. And it might not take one. It might take two. It may take 100 different conversations. But starting now, when you feel you're ready to start talking to them about it, is only going to help you at the end of the day. Yeah, Yechiel.
I think it's more, you were talking about this, Rosh Hashanah, about the difference between a shotgun and a friend. And the thing that I would say, let's say your experience, let's say you hanged out with people, or let's say you whatever, you're not religious, or you at one time whatever, so you have a sponsor, you know public school, whatever it is, yeah, or you know girls from before. So you don't really need necessarily that networking, you don't necessarily, you know how to hang out with a girl, so what's the benefit of using a shotgun in that situation?
Well, again, if you're referring to the fact that you know who you want to go out with, and maybe she already wants to go out with you, then you're right. You don't need the network. Maybe a shadchan could just be to make things more, you know, more comfortable, or you want to be a little bit more, you know, religious than just asking girls straight out directly, and you just want to be more comfortable. But you're right, you wouldn't need that network. But the network is coming from with the fact that you don't feel comfortable, whether it's for religious reasons or personal reasons, going to a mixed event and asking a girl, would she like to get a cup of coffee with you or apple juice? You want somebody else to
somebody
make
funny.
That record. I don't drink coffee either, so I would say Coke. But you just want the girl, and you have to make sure if you're going to be the type of guy to go up to a girl, that she's not taken aback by the fact that you're asking her out, because she probably will blush. Now, that's where the networking comes in. Not the fact that you are or aren't comfortable with a girl, but, you know, for sure in the more religious spectrum, it will, you know, again, this may go back to what Ben's conversation will or won't be with his parents, you can ask him, but that in the more religious perspective, it's not appropriate to go up to a girl to ask. So you're right, so where you're coming from, maybe it is more appropriate, it's more acceptable, so that's fine. But if you don't have that girl out there, a shadchan could just be someone saying, listen, there's a girl I think you should go out with, here's your phone number, give her a call. That's also networking. It's not the straight-up shadchan system, but it's being set up on a date. So the advantages of speaking to someone else are just to get your name out there. And so you don't have to hang out in a bar every night to find a girl, or Milt. You know, you could go you could live your life normally and have someone call you with a suggestion.
As a side, let's specifically in Chicago, Mrs. Reese is doing a lot of good work in trying to get people together and making these types of groups of singles together with one another. I think those are really, really important. But there still usually is a shadchan or someone there to help people along the way, because it still is a little uncomfortable when going to these groups. I think that's where it comes to play. They might let them talk to each other, as Rabbi Schoenfeld just said. They'll let them do everything. But Mrs. Reese is doing some great work in trying to make that happen. Mrs. Khan as well, Ms. Hillary Khan, as well as some of the groups that are, like Zev Feiger is putting together a lot of groups together on Friday nights, etc. Friday night meals. Those are really important also. They're not necessarily for some of the people in this room. They're for other people in the room, but everybody has to know where they fit and where they hold. If they're the types of people who, I don't think the shotgun world is going to work for me, then yeah, there are other options that are available. The online option that Rabbi Schoenfeld didn't talk about before, right, with YUConnex or, you know, Frumster.com or all of these types, even JDate, right, when you go through there, there's definitely some issues. But when you're dealing with, it is dealing with a network. If you put yourself up there, you are going to get phone calls from all these people out there. I have not yet seen a person in Chicago who has been a student of mine who has been happy with any of these websites and what they've done. I haven't yet seen it. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist, and maybe in New York it's a little bit easier. Maybe it's better there in that sense, but I've not yet found it that somebody said, yeah, this is what worked for me. That's the reason why Rabbi Sheinfeld maybe feels the same way. Maybe it's more of a tznius issue. I feel it just doesn't help here. YU Connects is amazing in YU and Stern and in New York, in the New York area. Here, it just isn't as much for the people that I've dealt with. But it could be that it works for you, and it's something that you want to consider because you never know. You really never know. As time goes on, maybe when you turn in a certain age, that's when you say, you know what, this isn't working for me. I'm going in a different direction. Maybe that's a different direction. And that, again, you speak to older mentors. You speak to people that are there. You can talk to them. You can ask them, what do you think? You know me. Is this a good thing for me? Is this not a good thing for me? Every person should be different when it comes to that. That's important. Yeah.
Question kind of relates to timing, like when is the appropriate time to be seen out in public in the Jewish world with somebody that you're dating?
Important. That's a great question. It depends on where you are. In Chicago specifically, because there are only a few, from kosher restaurants that are out there, there aren't enough. So that can get awkward. If you're from out of town coming to Chicago, then it might not be, but one of you might feel a little awkward going to a restaurant when there are so many people around. It's usually around, I would say, 5th, 6th dates where people feel a little bit more comfortable going out in public with one another, right, where they're okay with that. In New York, it's completely different. It is normal on a 2nd or a 3rd date to take girls out to a restaurant, depending on your Frumkeit level, right, where you'll take a girl to a restaurant because there's so many different places to go to and there's so many places around there. So depending on where you are, if you're in Manhattan, Queens, Brooklyn, etc., depending on where you go, they're completely different from one another. But that's, I would say you keep it further along and then you talk with her about it. Are you comfortable with going to a restaurant? Are you comfortable with going public, and going around somewhere or going to my house for Shabbos or going to your house for Shabbos, your parents' house or whatever it is? Are you okay with that? Each place is different when it comes to that. Yeah.
When I was a student here, guys used to get, dressed for a date in the tunnel and then, sneak out the back door so that no one knew they were even going on a date. That's changed what I've seen, but it's, you don't have to be super embarrassed when you get seen at, just speaking to Chicagoans at Navy Pier or at a museum or at a hotel. It happens, and it's normal, and that's fine. So you're being seen, but you're not making a statement. That's the biggest concern, is that going somewhere very Jewish is making a statement that you are, with this person on a serious level. So it's very important that you don't make the other person feel uncomfortable in that regard, because that could be a major sour note if you do something. Now, especially if you're going on one of those 13-hour dates, you will need to eat. So, you could call in takeout or something like that. But there is something. I once called a guy, and he answered the phone, and I didn't realize he was on a date with the girl buying food from Jewel. So those are all things that should not
have been... That's just awkward.
Those are all things that should not have been done. But you have to be, conscious of who you are, who you're with, and that unfortunately people talk, and people like good gossip, whether it's acceptable or not, and therefore be sensitive to that. But again, that doesn't mean you have to find the most secluded non-yichud place to go on a date. You have to be normal and be acceptable and not just hiding from everybody in that regard.
Right, the secluded secret places are probably Yichud. That's probably the issues with that. Yeah. Yes?
Just to clarify something that Rabbi said before about the whole when you're actually, getting engaged or proposing. So the way Rabbi made it seem to sit is that when you actually, if a guy happens to get down in one of these, that actually could be halachic shayla. So is that sort of like taboo to actually do it, or is that what's like standard? What actually goes on at that moment?
The knee is less of a problem halachically of kedushin.
Right.
Could be other issues, but
if you're going all Mecca on that, going all Mecca, that's a major problem. That's halachically an issue.
The words, "Will you marry me?"
Right.
Present. I'll be very honest. When I got engaged, so I was
extremely, you know, lucky or coincidental that my grandparents, decades ago, had bought diamonds for all their grandchildren. So I did not even have to put the expense into buying a diamond. Something that Rabbi Zimmerman hadn't discussed, actually, about getting engaged, which I know people do, both here or, you know, I got engaged, my wife is from Israel, so we actually went online and she picked out a setting once the diamond wasn't an issue. But also people do go to the store with their prospective collars to pick something out so that you could get engaged with the ring. But the issue comes down, so what I specifically said, it was the most unromantic thing you could possibly say, is that my grandfather got you a gift because you're willing to get engaged to me. You know, so it wasn't coming for me at all because it's only going to be a chashash of kiddush.
It's taken me a long time to train him. I'm telling you.
It's only an issue of kiddush if it's coming from you. So I like overly stressed.
So that was my question. Like, is it? It's a problem if you actually say those words.
You marry me? Because then it connotes the, as much as
we
a wedding ring.
Marry me with this ring. Yeah.
As much as a wedding ring is dafka not with diamonds and everything like that. So if we're going to be machmer, it's going to be an issue. So you just have to be careful.
Probably a shavapruta.
Yeah, you just have to be careful in how you say it. And if what you say is that this is a sign that, you know, that we're committed to getting together, something like that, but that it's not an act of kiddushin.
Next question.
Just as a follow-up, Ruby say it's better to have, if you want to have friends to take pictures and things, you better have her friends there to get rid of any chashash anyways if it's not going to be...
Nah, I don't think it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Again, your friends are probably puzzle. I would never use them as ADD. So the fact is, especially you, Ben. I mean, come on.
I was at a wedding tonight, and it was the chuppah, the chassan kala walking down, and the guy tells me he's there, and I said, so do tshuva. What? I'm like, just in case, you know, do tshuva. I have your Ruri tshuva right now. You make sure you go.
Unless you want to puzzle the wedding.
Elias, you had a question?
Yes. What are the possible pros and cons and pitfalls and whatever of double dating?
Okay, I've never been into it, and I've yelled at people before about it. I've never found it successful because I've never found a Mormon. So I don't think it ever works.
Rabbi Zimmerman has never been pro it. I never heard about it till today.
Yeah, I can tell you. It happens all the time. I when people go to New York, they want to have like three or four
backups.
No,
he's talking about two couples.
It's myself and my friend.
Yeah, they'll probably marry each other. The guys and the girls. So yeah, that's totally up my alley. That I have no problem with. I have no issue with it whatsoever. Okay. Scheinfeld, is there anything wrong with that? Yeah, I'm probably like, are you kidding me? There's no way that you could have a normal date. Maybe, if it's like all the way down and you're dealing with it, like you're close to getting engaged. No, never. I can't imagine when that will be a good situation in which you'll come out and you'll say, like, wow, that was really, really good.
Maybe if it doesn't work out with the girl and it doesn't work out with the other girl, you could do a switch.
Right, that's not happening with marriage, so it's not happening in dating either. This is never a good idea.
The concept of dating is to develop a relationship with this person. The more people that are involved in that situation, the less a relationship is going to be developed. And besides the fact that, again, the more charedi you get, the more anti they will be going out to eat with a married couple. I'm not necessarily talking about hosting company for Shabbos, that's also a separate issue, but that because you're always going to be comparing their perfect relationship to what I have. And Rabbi Zimmerman, I think he mentioned it 2 years ago, he didn't mention it as much this year, but I'm going to bring it up again, is that the fact about that we spoke about that your wife needs to be the most beautiful woman, the Yetzer Hara will attack you in that regard. The Yetzer Hara will attack you, especially right after you get engaged. He will make you second guess. Getting engaged, I said this to my wife before we got engaged. I've said this to other people before. And my wife did not react kindly to it when I first said it to her, but she gives the same advice now, is that you're jumping off a cliff because it is impossible to know everything. It's impossible. You are taking a leap of faith with this other person getting engaged.
Again, these are not things you say on the date, right? Not when... Like, will you get married to me so I can jump off a cliff? It's not the way.
But you need to have that bubble of developing as much as you can. And yes, the Yetzer Hara will attack you. When are things valid concerns? That's what we're doing not right now. Mussar Seder, those who are with me, is that what are valid chashashos and what's being ridiculous? So yeah, the Yetzer Hara will try and nod you. Are you sure you're making the right decision? Because if you marry this girl, that's it, you're done. There's no more. How do you know the grass is not greener somewhere else? And that's the Yetzer Hara, as opposed to letting it develop properly. And that's, again, another reason getting out of town will pull away from some of those issues because you're removed from the hard situations that are in front of you. And therefore, you don't have to deal with that on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. So, in essence, the answer to the question is no. That's yeah, don't do it. Okay. Don't do it. But there are ways of, when you get older, as time goes on, where couples have the ability to go out with one another, and it won't be a problem tenuous-wise. That just deals with every person, again, individually, right? But everything is different as time goes on, where it's important to have certain gedarim between you and your wife that you and your wife know that you will never cross. I found it personally very awkward when I was first got married, and we weren't into having guests at our house just then that were other couples, but I remember one time we did, and the guy got up to go help my wife in the kitchen, and I was sitting there with his wife, and she was starting a conversation with me, and I was like, I don't want to talk about your dating experience right now. This is not there. And everybody's different when it comes to that. Some people find it a little bit more, whatever it is, right? But I was, for me, that wasn't what I wanted. And every person is different. Every person is going to have to see when that works for them. Yeah.
Just on a follow-up, both of you stressed getting out of town, if possible, is definitely a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just talking about the Yitzhar coming up with reasons. Wouldn't, like, not seeing them, because you're out in a completely different thing, give the Yitzhar more of a...
Yes, but it's first of all, it's the lesser of two evils, literally. But it also is easier to blame on the Yitzhar then. Meaning, it's easier to blame on, it's just, you know, your imagination running away with you, mm-hmm. as opposed to, I'm seeing this person, wait, she's not the same person I thought she was, and she doesn't look the same way, and she's being more relaxed. It just removes, it opens it more to the imagination, but therefore can be calmed down a lot simpler also, at least in my perspective.
Subjectively also, yeah.
I also went out of town, you know, I was going for...
I think it is, yeah, don't get me wrong. There are definitely people, especially if you have a job in the city, there's no question, like you stay in the city and everything will work out well and everything will be good. But you got to have, again, gedarim. There's got to be certain things where you decide how often you're going to see your kala, how often you guys are going to be together, and how often it's going to be. I remember Rabbi Cohn in Yeshurun told somebody not too long ago that it should be one time a week for 1 hour that they should meet each other. And they're like, that's not going to work for us or any human being. So, that you know, it depends.
Especially, I don't want to interrupt, but especially nowadays, which is not shy when I was going out, with texting. I mean, texting, as Rabbi Zimmer mentioned, even in the dating process, can be never-ending. Very easy to get misunderstood, because there's no tone of voice, obviously, being given over. And, unfortunately, you're a lot freer. Your gedarim and your normal boundaries are a lot lower when it's not the direct conversation. So there's so many negatives that could happen. That's also, you have to keep in mind, even amount of time that you spend on the phone with your kala should be limited. And again, a mentor should be the one deciding that with you, together with you, what the kala needs and what the chasa needs.
One last thing before we go, guys. I this is just a very, very quick point, and I kept forgetting to bring it up before. If you haven't cleaned yourself up online yet, you should do that. Like, if you still have a MySpace page from, like, 1984, right, you should probably take care of that. If you should Google yourself once in a while. Everybody should do that anyway. Just Google your own name. See what comes up. If the first thing that comes up is jail, right, something like that, you want to be careful about stuff like that. Try to take care of those types of things now. If there are pictures that you're going to be embarrassed of, right? I think there's a whole TV show that has, like, pictures that deal with the things that they find in your Facebook page, and they put it out there and they make it public for everybody. That's embarrassing. Don't have those pictures up there, right? There's no reason for that. But this is the time to clean it up, to make sure that those pictures are not out there and that you don't have to worry about those types of things. And those things just go away. They dissipate quickly enough. Okay, I think we're going to end with this for right now. If there are any other questions, obviously you can get a hold of me and Rabbi Sheinfeld. If you need anything else, David has the entire website that's wide open for everybody. Thank you so much for coming, everyone. Have a great night.